kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
I just know number two pencils.
So number two is like HB, and it's the perfect medium of hard and soft. It's not overly smudgy, but it's not going to give like a super black line either. And then like from there, you move up or down the scale, and it either gets softer or gives darker lines and is more smudgy or whatever.
So do number one and number three pencils exist?
No.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me as co-host this week, Cole Martin. Cole, how are you doing today?
I am pretty good. How are you?
You know, it's a Thursday. What are you going to do?
It's not Friday, but it's not Wednesday.
Yeah, just right in the middle.
Yeah, right. It's a little more tolerable.
Yeah. Anyway, we have a guest joining us today.
A guest!
I'm so good at like transitions and segues. From Megacat Studios, James, is it James Deegan?
Yep.
Sweet, I got it. I didn't even check beforehand. James, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Yeah, I'm doing good. It feels pretty Thursday for me too, but I feel good.
Is your Thursday an okay Thursday?
Can't complain.
Now that it's November, did either of you do anything fun for Halloween?
I don't have anything that stands out, but I did have Mario Odyssey available, so I think that was a good addition.
God damn right it was.
Halloween is actually a really big event for me and my sister because we don't get to spend holidays together. We're both married and we get shuffled off to our respective in-laws for Thanksgiving and Christmas. So when number one was born, we decided like Halloween was going to be our thing. And so we actually checked the kids out of school early and drove the 30 miles to my sister's and spent all of Halloween with her. And went trick-or-treating and went out to eat and all kinds of good stuff. Fun. And got an obscene amount of candy.
I don't know. I think I'm going with Mario Odyssey was the better night.
I was listening and kind of thinking, like, yeah, I feel pretty good about my decisions.
I mean, candy's good.
My sister had one of those moments. She was like, I always give the girls an obscene amount of candy. And I realized that since you had kids, I stopped getting Halloween candy for you. And so this year she kind of went overboard. And you know, like those tubs, those Rubbermaid tubs you get for storage at Walmart for like $5. Mm-hmm. She got one of those and she filled it up with like boxes of truffles and special flavored cookies and just everything under the sun that I love. So I will be eating that until this time 3 years from now.
So you're going to be sending us care packages, right?
I don't know if I want to share. I was about to say sure, but then I thought, do I really want to give away those apple spice cookies? Because those are freaking good.
Oh. I'm sure James has some good stuff to barter to like get some candy.
I mean, I might trade for Mario Odyssey. I haven't played Mario in like forever.
No, I'd stick with Mario. Anyway, James, you are here for Megacat Studios. For the people who don't know what Megacat Studios is and what you guys do, who are you and what do you do?
So we're an indie dev company based out of Pittsburgh, PA, and we make games for old consoles and new. I think we're currently like most known for the old console stuff since a lot of the newer gen dev has been contract work. But we have a few pretty exciting current-gen PC and Xbox One, PS4, and Switch releases coming out in the next 6 months.
Ooh, anything we may have heard of already?
Everything we've been working on has been pretty mellowed out and quiet. I think the only one that we've had lots of playtime with publicly has been Logjammers for the PC. Ooh. That's a game that we originally made for the NES that we finished the PC version a few months ago. Have been adding online multiplayer integration, Twitch integration, and we've taken it to some local events that we've attended and a couple across the U.S. We had it set up at TwitchCon about 3 weeks ago, and then last week we won best overall game, best in show at GameCon in Atlantic City.
Oh, well, congrats on that!
Yeah, everyone's pretty proud of our our little efforts, our little rewards for the pretty huge effort so far. But what I love about the Logjammers PC game, by the way, and I'm happy to send you guys some Steam keys to check out, is that it kind of has the like MegaCat brand ethos all tied up. Lots of couch co-op, tons of fun humor, quick gameplay. It definitely fits like the retro aesthetic without, you know, being confined to an NES cartridge. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Hey, I'm a fan of NES. That's what caught my attention with MegaCat Studios, is you guys have made and released and manufactured a bunch of NES games, which immediately caught my attention.
Yeah, it's interesting for anyone who's into the like collector side of retro market and is, you know, pretty dev tech capable, competent. People always ask us, like, how are you doing this full time? We always feel like the color drains from our face because we're not really sure either. It's kind of like take all the challenges that yeah, right. Is it like take all the challenges that like indie game companies have of product market fit and, you know, no money and crunch time and dev timelines and all this stuff, and then make the ceiling like 100 times lower and then make the cost to make it like 200 times higher.
Okay.
And we're like, all right, this is good. Let's stretch the hamstrings and start typing.
Damn.
So
how difficult. We all had a thing to say.
Well, I was just saying that, you know, it's something anyone that does it because they love it. And I don't think anyone does it as a full-time like focus for their explicit business just because it's not really sustainable. But we have a backlog of work. So the reason we've had so many games coming to completion is a lot of these games have been in some kind of concept like halfway through dev phase for a few years.
Mm.
So like the constant throughput that we have right now is definitely going to come to a slowdown like halfway through 2018. And it'll be a much more curated focus because there'll be a much more normal timeline start to finish. Most of these games are bare minimum 6 months of effort start to finish.
And then midway through 2018 is when you guys will have too much time on your hands and everything devolves into drugs and hookers and the company crumbles.
So that was actually 2016. And we're still recovering from that. So, but halfway through 2018 stuff is just shifting the focus onto something that, you know, we've been really working towards into something we're calling an upmake. So I'm not sure about the branding side. Well, we'll end up calling it in a year. But the upmake for us is finding core gameplay that's like fun and fulfilling that plays on a retro cartridge, and then doing a still pixel art version, but redoing all the art and adding features that are, you know, available to us with newer tech stacks, like, you know, in Unity. Whenever you're playing Logjammers PC, you can look and feel all the different shaders, Unity effects, particle effects, all the juiciness and haptic feedback, things you can't actually do on Nintendo, while still bringing those characters to life and giving them a little more excitement.
Are you telling me that NES doesn't have rumble capabilities and online gameplay?
Depends on your audience. Most of the time, it doesn't come with its stock.
I wonder if people have modded Rumble Packs and online in the NES games.
There are some interesting like community projects for online stuff that's been happening. I know there's a semi-famous one a while ago with the, like, you can log in and like check Twitter with like your Nintendo.
That is incredible.
It's pretty crazy for sure. But there's been a lot of enthusiast stuff. There's something for Genesis right now where they're going back, editing some projects to do some, you know, at least local online play, working towards online play for games that didn't originally have it, which is really crazy. But you can imagine that those types of projects that have enormous scopes, low probability, and no commercial viability are not going to be finished. But wouldn't it be nice?
I mean, you mentioned commercial viability. I'm not sure many people these days would think to create, develop NES games and then manufacture them. I can only imagine how expensive that kind of endeavor is.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun hurdle to overcome. So almost everybody here either was a collector, and everyone here certainly is a collector now. We definitely have a global team in a real way. You know, one of our team leads is in Scotland. We have some guys in the UK, Istanbul, Philippines. Our office in Pittsburgh is about 15 people full-time. we've been doing contract work for a while under various names that weren't cat related. And I think anybody that's doing like art and dev and making video games at a certain point, you know, they want to do something that gives them the fulfilling creative endeavor of seeing their own concept start to finish. So last year we all had to sit down on during our company like New Year's Eve party and decided we'd start seeing through some of our own projects, do the whole startup thing. You know, here's what we have. Let's give up lots of contract work and open up the bandwidth of creating our own things and then building, you know, the marketing infrastructure and release infrastructure and everything else. So we invested in some of our own plastic shell molds with a group. So we have our own NES shells. We can make them in any color. You know, we definitely put a lot of effort into making sure that every single thing has the attention to detail that we'd want in something we're buying, which doesn't come cheap either. We went through a ton of sticker iterations. You would be so surprised how many sticker types exist in the world. But the ones we ended up settling on, they're great. They're actually printed on plastic. So if you see them in person, you absolutely can't tell. But not only do they never bubble no matter what, and they're resilient to you know huge temperature shifts, but they're waterproof, you know, they're smear proof, they're die cut. You know, they're the same type of sticker you'd see on like a ketchup bottle in the refrigerator.
So they can tolerate the spittle when somebody has to blow into the cartridge to get the dust out and make it work.
These cartridges can tolerate group spittle. So
yes.
Get as many tiny mouths together as possible and give one communal exhale. And these labels will stand the test of time.
Hey guys, the game's not working right. Everyone huddle up.
Inhale. I can just see like a, you know, one of these like, you know, nerd fitness, group fitness exercise classes, just everyone grabbing an exercise ball and a cartridge and just going to work on it.
That's a workout routine I could get behind. Just sitting on the ball, blowing into the cartridge. Yeah, this is burning calories.
How do you get to a point where you decide when you've got a game and you look at it and you go, the best release for this is for the NES?
Yeah, so because of the technical limitations of each console, after we create like the high-level concept of wouldn't it be cool if we made a game where a mustache banana cop beats up tons of bad fruits and vegetables? And we're like, yeah, that's a good idea. And if it makes it past that, yeah, it's a good idea when we're sober stage, then we can start discussing, you know, what the game features would be, you know, what the kind of hallmark things in that genre were like on different consoles, what features they had, how we could improve on them. And then we work backwards from whatever type of limitations they have. So like on the NES, there's one of the hard limits is the horizontal scan light limitation. So the horizontal scan lines, if they have too many sprites, you know, in motion, aside from slowdown and optimization problems, tons and tons of blinking, they kind of lose a little bit of the, I don't want to say immersive gameplay, but you know, it kind of breaks up like the fun of the game if you have lots of slowdown and things like that. So when we're creating the design docs, you know, we have to start from the beginning with like grid level, granular detail on how we'll work technically with it.
That's nuts. I don't think I would have that kind of patience.
It's definitely interesting. We have two really awesome, or three really awesome, technical, capable, talented artists. And it's, you know, Andy, our first hire for art. He's been with me since we started. And the Harry and Frank, and they're killer at putting the puzzle together and making the games fun, more feature rich. And if you look at our like first games we released and our games are releasing now, you can see their like continued evolution as artists working and pushing the limits of the console.
Is it hard to get yourselves to like stay within the limitations of an NES given how advanced consoles are these days and be like, oh yeah, we can't do that in a system this old. It's just not capable of it.
I think that's actually a driving force for people working within these limitations. Now, I had a really cool quote about a week or two ago from Milos, one of our devs. So he's working on a Sega Genesis game that's kind of like a roguelike with like 90s moms. It's kind of like a dungeon crawler in the suburbs. You know, we're talking about the whole like feature breakdown, all that stuff. And he had a pretty much spot on quote about, you know, what I really like about this is like the incredible masochistic efforts that are required to do the most basic thing. You know, so not only can we take like a 2017, you know, 10 years of gaming in between and what we learn and what's going on, but, you know, really push things thematically in gaming, not just hardware wise, that could have been done, but, you know, weren't a thing yet then. But, it's the same thing with the artist. I think everyone loves like the crazy ride of fitting as many things as possible in with unique, you know, variances. Like you take for granted like a foreground object. Well, in the NES, you're definitely either adjusting tons and tons of background swaps or adding sprites on sprites and sprites to get that same effect. That's totally taken for granted. If you can do it 30 minutes in Unity, it's probably a full day or more to do the same thing in NES retro dev.
Oh, Lord. How do you guys handle game file sizes? Because, you know, we're in an era where games are routinely 50 to 100 gig. And in the NES days, like if you look at ROM file sizes of NES games, they're under a meg for many of them.
Yeah, it's just super optimizing anything, right? It's both the code being super refactored and then the art assets being like heavily reused and utilized. If you look at, you know, the character sheets and spreadsheets for some of the games we've worked on, you know, instead of just changing, you know, tons and tons of 96 sheets of the same character for the Unity version, for the NES version, they're sharing every possible thing they can. So we're saving as much space as possible. So you might have a shared neck across 20 enemies that is completely unseen in gameplay, but the artist took lots of effort to make sure they could, you know, make that neck shared.
Or like the trees and the clouds are the same, like in Mario Brothers.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I mean, Mario Brothers is still like a feat of strength that they fit that on such a small file size. Like the first Mario Brothers having as many levels that feel as unique as they do still is just mind boggling to anybody.
Have there been any moments where you guys have put something in a game and then after the fact sat down after all the work and been like, that might not have been worth it?
Yeah, so, you know, we have a really kind of cool project management tool that happened because we kept doing that. And the project management tool sounds really silly, but we just create a table that has the feature listed in column one. Column two is the expected development time. And then the next column is like the cool factor. And then the final column is a ratio. So we look at the ratio and we see that there's a reasonable output compared to the cost it'll take versus, you know, what it'll bring to the game, then it'll make the final cut. But otherwise, I think that anybody who makes games is so enthusiastic when they start and then super enthusiastic when they finish. But like the, you know, defining the scope of work within the retro consoles before you start rolling forward with dev, because everything has to be planned out from the beginning. It is easily one of the hardest things, because it's easy to get in front of you when you get attached to some of these characters and some of the games and, you know, not want to give up features that sound really freaking awesome, but are going to cost like weeks of like life and effort. And since we are doing this as like a full-time effort, where a team of professionals show up and this is what we do all day long. And that definitely has its own kind of interesting, like sometimes overwhelming connotation of like, all right, I have to be a little bit reasonable here and still put every single, you know, piece of effort and keystroke into this that I can, but is it really worth it to have 250 different hats for this ninja to wear? Like maybe 248,
yeah.
You know, maybe give off two hats, keep those for next year. Maybe that's a,
that's DLC. You know,
maybe that's a worthwhile DLC.
DLC on the NES.
I'll sell cartridge.
Sticker packet you slap on the TV.
Yes. It's like a Vectrex where they have the layover, the little plastic sheet to go over the screen.
Yeah, it's great. You know, we've actually talked about like finding two or three standard size TVs and doing a Vectrex type overlay for it, because I think it could be super cool.
Oh, nice.
The challenge is just scaling it to different TV sizes, because they're, even though the aspect ratio is the same and there's probably a common five, we thought we would support some PVMs since there's a lot of PVM gamers, but you know, by the time we got through the custom printing costs of doing something to the quality standard we wanted and the design standard and all the other things, we really started thinking like, why are we trying to kill each other? Because it's already like this super narrowly focused niche of people who are still playing on hardware. Like now we're going to try to find it only people that are playing on hardware that have a specific model of a TV. Like we might as well just jump off a cliff now.
And they'll probably all be CRTs too.
Yep. Yeah. You know, it's crazy is that I think a really common thing that happens at an event for us, like when we set up, is we end up being easily one of the most popular booths, vendor tables, and people are just crowded around, constantly playing, like, you know, high-fiving us for the efforts. But so many people just don't have a Nintendo. And if they do have a Nintendo, they don't have a way to play it and stream it in HD.
Yeah.
And what the new kind of robust, like, third-party aftermarket consoles that do play in HD, we're hoping that we can find a really cost-effective, simple, you know, solution for that, because the wholesale cost on, like, the AV, like, Retron ones is, like, less than $10, so super cheap. But then you run into the problem that most people don't have a way to capture via AV without upscalers, scanline generators, or just crazy input lag, or, you know, more likely, they don't have something they want to plug in an AV cord to because LCDs don't look so nice.
Yeah. Do your games work okay on, like, the Retrons? Because I have a Retron 5, and, you know, that hooks up with HDMI. Do you guys have any compatibility issues?
Yeah, some of the games work perfectly natively the first time through on the Retron 5. You know, we have one or two games that, depending on the firmware version, it works fine. Like, if it's updated, it's good. And then we have one or two that just no matter what we did, we could not get them to work correctly on Retron 5.
Hmm.
You can imagine that in the, I guess there's three or four companies that make aftermarket consoles that are up to a good quality standard. Well, nothing against Hypergen, but they definitely don't make something that's to the quality standard of, like, the analog NT or the ABS. And because they're emulating everything, there's really, like, no way for us to get under the hood and make sure that it works well with it, other than just endless, like, guess and check, guess and check, guess and check.
Yeah.
Everything we make works perfectly every time with the analog and the ABS, because they both run just like original hardware. And they're native HDMI. They're just a little bit cost prohibitive for some gamers. You figure, like, the both of them, even used, are still around $200 to $300.
Oh, wow.
So you got to be pretty dedicated at that point, which our customer base is very loyal. We have something like a 80 or 90% return rate for repeat customers. Like, if they come to the store, that they keep supporting our projects, and that's the only way we're able to keep doing what we're doing. It's getting new customers. It's always a unique challenge because everybody loves these games. They love playing, and the nostalgia of, you know, holding those controllers, sitting in the living room, elbowing their friend in the face, all those things, something they want to come back to. But somewhere between having the other tech to hook up the hardware and having the time, because we're all adults now, it ends up breaking down. So one of our long-term project investments is our own custom encrypted emulator that we'll be able to release a lot of these games on PC for. So it's something we're super excited about that we're going to start doing in December for the games we just released, actually.
Oh, nice. Is there a way to also eventually get those on home consoles as well?
Yeah, so we are official NES, Nintendo, PlayStation, and Xbox developers. We have dev kits for them. And we've been porting Coffee Crisis. We sent it certification for Xbox, so it should be released pretty soon on Xbox One.
Sweet.
And PS4, probably middle of the first quarter for next year.
Nice.
And then after that, we're hoping that we have enough throughput and runway to be pretty selective and still get some of those new-gen expectations for a very cost-effective indie game. You know, so achievement systems are something we already have on our NES cartridges.
Oh, but that's cool.
Kind of interesting quality assurance things that consoles do to make sure that things run perfectly for user experience don't work very friendly with games that are made in assembly. So we're definitely giving the pretty small team at ID at Xbox lots and lots of headaches. They're like, all right, well, how do we check to make sure the people are still connected playing the game? We're like, that's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question. You know, but they've been pretty hands-on. I think there's somebody there that still plays, like, the Nintendo in the closet at lunchtime or something that's been secretly allowing us to keep pushing forward on it.
Who knows? Maybe everyone there just has an NES Classic hooked up, and they're like, you know, we need more. I love retro gaming. Like, I grew up in the 80s. NES was the first console I personally owned, so seeing new NES games coming out just makes my day.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I support every homebrew project that I see come out. We try to avoid the word homebrew, not because I don't like it. It's just that, you know, the amount of effort and time we put into them is definitely like a, you know, commercial quality release that we think if you play our games and you play other NES games, it's something you can imagine having been officially released during the life cycle of that console.
Yeah. To me, when I think homebrew, I think like a shitty knockoff of Pong or Snake.
Yeah, for sure. And sometimes that's what our customers and friends think too. So we try to avoid using those kind of terms whenever we talk about our games. But I've been supporting every homebrew project that I see pop up for a decade. I can tell you that I have like 10 really bad puzzle games that I'll never play that I paid $50 a piece for just because I love supporting the community and I love like people making these new games.
And you got to collect them all, right?
Someone's got to do it.
So for the people collecting everything, how many games have you guys released so far in NES?
So NES, we're nearing 10 coming up here. But wow. By the time this calendar year closes, there might be three more. We definitely have lots and lots of projects that are above the 75% mark because it's been a few years of effort to just, you know, a lot of custom tools we had to develop to streamline the process, lots of edge cases, kind of making sure that, you know, the quality is still there on the hardware too. So it's, you know, both the, I want to say like integrity of the hardware itself so it doesn't get damaged or degrade and doesn't do any damage to the console with the right beveled edge connectors and, you know, high quality components that'll outlast consoles are being played on, down to making sure that all of these derivative aftermarket consoles play our games without problems or slowdown.
Damn, that sounds like so much work to do.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm sure that if we knew every single detail about all the problems and headaches we would run into when we first started, we would have never started. But once we were in, we were pretty committed, like financially, and that gave us the drive to finish a few things. And then what, you know, really pushed the needle forward was getting a lot of the, I don't want to call it like fan mail, but just the response from some of the community of like, this is so great. Thank you so much. I spent, you know, these last two nights sitting and playing and sharing some of the retro things I love with my girlfriend. And these games gave me kind of that same nostalgia for the first time with new titles and lots of little messages like that, that encouraged us to keep pushing through the mud.
That's really cool. And then something else I love is that you guys don't half-ass it and like just put out a shitty generic cartridge. Like, you go all out with official looking cartridges. They're shaped exactly like NES cartridges, instruction booklets, boxes, high quality stick. Like, you guys go all out with this stuff.
Yeah, the boxes are cool too. I love the boxes we have. Just like everything else, we're very selective on, you know, what material type and where, and all of our boxes they have lots of little cool features too. They're, you know, they're embossed or they're foiled. You know, they're made on nice laminated cardstock. When you assemble them, whether they are shipped assembled or shipped flat, depending on where you're located in the world, when you fold them out, they're not going to rip. They're not going to tear. They're something you can open and close over and over. I've had a few kind of aftermarket projects where it almost feels like the box is meant to be disposable. Like when I open it up, it just rips, right? But yeah, we definitely put a lot of attention to detail on presentation. You know, I have a theory that somewhere around 25% of the people that buy our games just buy them to put on their shelf and enjoy that way. And it's like just as disheartening as it is fulfilling that they like them enough that if they did have time to game and didn't have three kids, a full-time job, and a ton of grass to cut, that, you know, they're buying our cartridges because they look just as cool as, you know, a collectible as they play.
Some people care more about the physical collection than the actual content of the games. I mean, how many people out there pick up everything that Limited Run Games does to have a complete PS4 or Vita collection?
Yeah, that's true. And I appreciate that as someone who is a collector myself. I've always considered myself more of a player. And then as time went by, I had the thirst to finish some sets. And, you know, once it starts, you just got to keep digging.
if somebody wasn't... Go!
Go ahead.
If somebody wasn't into retro gaming and was just looking to get started with it, and they approached you and was like, which one of your games would be the best to start with, what would you say?
Well, first I have to ask them which console they grew up with and then which console they have now. Because I do think, you know, having that the first controller you played with, like in your hands, is like a very important part of, you know, exercising your nostalgic muscles here. But for Genesis, it's definitely Coffee Crisis. Not only do we have a lot of pain putting that game together and making it all, you know, work the way it should, it's pretty full featured. It's fun to play. The turbocharged hits that we added with the last release is definitely fun. I think the storyline is funny. You know, like whenever we get to watch people play it at events or stream it, you know, it generally goes over very favorably for people who are fans of that genre. And I think everybody likes a beat 'em up. For the Nintendo, it was Logjammers at first, just because of the accessibility, like low barrier to understanding the controls. You know, it's almost like a hyped up, graphically funny Pong with good character development. But, you know, people can pick it up, and very quickly you'll see two people playing it at a convention, just getting all those fun couch co-op things together. When they start getting super competitive, they're like hunching forward, holding the controllers pretty tight. And that's what prompted us to make the PC version and really get out make for it. But Logjammers is definitely not the most exciting game that we have for the NES. It just fills that couch co-op void quite well. Creepy Brawlers that we just released is definitely the most feature-rich and dev-intensive game that we've released for the Nintendo.
Speaking of that one, I've actually been looking at that one. You're talking about having cool collector stuff. The limited acrylic cartridge for that thing looks fucking crazy.
Yeah, thanks. We definitely appreciate that. Everything like that takes a lot of time and effort, and we always wonder if it's going to be worth it until it actually gets released. But we've had a good response. You know, they sold out almost instantly. I think we added five more in stock.
Oh wow!
Like yesterday, and I think that'll be the end of the run. But you know, we've had a great response so far with people just kind of clamoring to grab it. And the game itself is definitely fun. If you look at a game like Mike Tyson's Punch Out, it's a classic. It's hard to improve on just this like amazing game, right? But we had an opportunity to take a genre that hasn't had a ton of other people jumping in for it, probably because of the brutal development that it takes to make sprites that big on the Nintendo work quickly. But, you know, it's imagine if you played Punch-Out that had counterattacks, an achievement system, enemy evolutions, you know, and it's an all-new game. So it's every single enemy is challenging in that game to a point where if you're a pro Punch-Out, you'll be able to play Creepy Brawlers. But I've watched a ton of Punch-Out champs just buckle to the werewolf.
Oh, man, I'm so interested in that game now. And I swear, if the Xbox One X wasn't coming out on Tuesday, I would probably totally drop the $100 for that acrylic cartridge.
That's why we pushed back our Kickstarter for Logjammers. We were going to put it up about 2 weeks ago, and I was on a plane to TwitchCon, and we were talking to some of the guys there because we were going to put the Kickstarter up the next day. And the first 20 people I met, you know, filled me in that it wasn't just Mario Odyssey coming out. It was like, you know, the new Everything. Call of Duty. Yeah, the new Call of Duty, new Assassin's Creed, like Destiny 2. And by the time they finished the lineup, I'm thinking like, all right, we can already barely get the exposure we need on large press with this like indie apocalypse scenario and Steam Direct and all these other hurdles. Of course, this is like the worst time ever to release, you know, put up a Kickstarter. And then like Kickstarter Japan just finished and all these other things. So we bumped it back a few weeks. We're going to put it up about halfway through November. So we have a little bit of runway and kind of combine it with like an anti-Black Friday campaign.
Oh, that'd be cool.
So fingers crossed, there's lots of funny zombie jokes and smack talking, and it's definitely fun to play in person, online, local. The Twitch integration is definitely very cool that we added in. So lots of interesting surprises, and anyone who has played and enjoyed the original Logjammers, which is the first game that we sold above 200 copies for, we're doing like a kind of like a Logjammers Redux as part of the Kickstarter also, adding some other features, trying to push the NES a little harder.
Nice. So what are your plans with the Kickstarter? Do you have any kind of like really, really cool tiers planned? Any kind of special offers you guys are going to be doing?
So the Twitch integration is definitely like a core feature for us. That it's the first time we've done it for sure, but we're doing a couple neat things for how the people watching the streamers play could really engage and be part of like the live interactive environment that is Twitch. That's definitely something that's unique to us and unique to other Twitch integrated games. The actual gameplay itself for Logjammer's PC, so far we've only had it set up at three events, but the two events that had contests, we won first place in each, for what it's worth. They weren't international sized giant scale events, but we're pretty proud of the little impression that we get that if we set it up and people hold the controllers, they're always having fun and they're always telling their friends about it.
And that's the important part, really.
Yeah, I want to say that we're in business because we want to make money to stay in business, but we definitely are in business doing this because we just love it. I don't think there's a single person that works for us that couldn't, update their resume and almost double their salary. I think that it's a pretty common thing with really talented video game devs that, enterprise applications like augmented reality, even gaming, pays so much more, and it's widely available. People are clamoring around a lot of the VR AR stuff right now, but people that stick it to the indie gaming side and really stay focused on it, it's because they find it personally fulfilling just as much as that gap that might exist in their paycheck. But that said, I don't think there's anybody that has played Logjammer's any of our events so far that hasn't like audibly responded, giggling, laughing, pet poking their friend, taking pictures. So there's lots of attention to detail with character design, the writing, just lots of little features with the juice. It's definitely a game that I think has a pretty broad scope of people that will enjoy it, and it kind of meets all of the retro things that we love.
So have you guys caused any fights having it at conventions? Any fist fights break out because of your game?
Yeah, one of the events that we set up at Replay FX, which is a pinball convention, they do have alcohol there.
Oh, God.
So I did get to watch my first dad-on-dad fight at our booth, which I look at that as a win. If the game is like that close and couch co-op and that like engaging for people, that a little bit of alcohol can end a friendship, I feel like we're doing what Mario Party wants to do still.
Nice. It's always good to have a game that destroys friendships.
I have to agree.
It really is. What's the best story you have from a convention?
In general, I want to say that if I'm basing them off of people playing games, what I enjoy the most, like my most fond memory, is the first time we had people playing Logjammer's. We spend a lot of time coming up with silly how they smack talk before a match, what they say after, what the characters look like, what their personalities are, what kind of hobbies they have. And the first time we watched people play it for 30, 40 minutes, and I was helping some kids get set up with the HTC Vive game that we made. And they're I'm giving them some hands-on instruction how to use the controls. I can hear the two guys behind us using the characters' names and talking about them and describing them and kind of just really remembering every piece of them. It's definitely an interesting feeling seeing the characters come to life and other people enjoy them when it really feels like a lot of inside jokes.
Inside jokes.
Do you ever have moments where you're just like, no, that's not how you say that character's name, or that's not how you're supposed to play with that character, or you're not doing it right, put the controller down? Because that's what I would do. That's what I do when my kids play.
Maybe not with the playing as much as I guess sometimes I get a little pushy with people using their items. It always starts off real friendly. I'm like X throws, and if you time X for a catch, it'll give you a volley. A volley is like a counterattack. It'll throw the axe right back. And then, I'm saying B allows you to use an item. Here's how the item's indicated if you have it. Here's what the items do. And I'll watch them play, and they're so focused on moving the characters, catching the axes, and throwing. They'll get these awesome items. Like, the special attacks are so cool in Logjammer's. And they'll just have these stars swirling around their character's head, just sitting on these awesome specials. I will start really casually, like, hit B when you get the axe back. Or, you're going to want to hit B. Okay, you're the skeleton. You're going to want to hit B. If you don't hit B, I'm going to unplug the controller. it does escalate, right? But
I will most fucking of the time, cut you.
Most of the time, it's pretty cool. But, I'm personally attached to one of the characters that's based on me. He's this, incredibly overweight, nasty person that's full of mayonnaise. So his name's Mayonnaise Monsoon. And, you know, the idea was that, you know, mayonnaise is like this bloated zombie type that his skin is so gooey. If you touch his skin, it feels like he's full of mayo.
Oh, God.
But he also just loves mayo. So as a fellow mayo enthusiast, I'm like, oh, this is my guy, you know? So whenever I see people like talking about him, it's not uncommon for people to play as him. And he has a really funny thing. Like whenever you score on him, he just does this like really sad, motionless vomit of mayonnaise where he just bends over and vomits mayo. And I love it, right? But I've seen a lot of people see it and they'll just like straight up tell me how gross it is. Or
oh God.
Well, actually, one of our artists, like, you know, like was telling me how much he hates him and he thinks he's scary. I'm like, I'm thinking like, you son of a bitch. Like, you know, that's my like spirit character, you know,
it's my spirit zombie.
Yeah. Come on, man.
It's
a slap to the condiment face.
Is he just a mayonnaise hater or what?
Yeah. Who knows? At the deepest level, eventually, once we're able to afford like normal things like insurance, he's getting therapy first. Cause mayonnaise is like a contributor pillar of the community. He's like a good politician. He does good for the children. Like the only thing he does that's gross is vomit mayonnaise.
Some people are just racist, man. Racist against the mayo zombies.
That's just how it is.
What are you going to do? I don't know. I wouldn't wait and get him therapy. I'd just fucking fire him, you know?
You know, it's funny you said that because everybody makes it like a core focus to record him on Slack calls, like baiting him in to say negative things about mayo and just pound me directly. They're like, can you believe what Harry said about mayo? You know, and I always start off like, I'm like, oh, yeah, they're baiting me. And I like listen to it. I'm thinking like that son of a bitch. This is the last time he's going to shit talk me like that. Get away with it.
That's amazing. Did you save any of the voice clips?
I do have some of the voice clips, actually.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. You have to send one over so I can include it in the episode.
I definitely will. It's one of these things where like, I just figured at some point whenever we have like an employee review, it would be really funny to save those and just include it.
Well, we all know it's your review time, and I just want to get your thoughts on this audio clip. Mayonnaise is fucking disgusting.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've already confronted them directly about it so many times. It's surprising to me that he keeps mayonnaise bashing my guy. But man, he must be just as dedicated to the anti campaign as I am about spreading the joy of mayo.
Some people, man.
Maybe he's a ketchup person.
Yeah, he's one of our first artists we hired, too. He's super talented and really hands-on. So I imagine it would sound something like this. Like, Harry, you're a great artist. You've grown with the team as we've grown. I love everything you did, but this is your last day working here. You know, like every day I've been moving this really nasty votive calendar of packets of mayo over, looking for this big red star that says this is where Harry ends.
On
you
his...
just have to like start leaving trails of mayo packets around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. It's like every day I empty out my pockets and it's like keys, change, some empty mayo packets with like X's over them.
Oh God. On his final day, if he's ever leaving the company to move on to bigger and better things or bigger and worse things, whatever, just get like a Gatorade cooler filled with mayo and like celebrate his final day.
Yeah, I actually love the idea of like just dunking mayo on him. He's actually coming to the U.S. for one of our conventions we're doing in the spring, MAGFest, easily my favorite.
Fuck yeah, MAGFest. Sorry, that was loud.
So I hope if you guys are there, you come over and say hi to us.
I will be there, absolutely. I have been to every MAGFest, so I will be there.
So we are definitely there too, and this year we have some really fun stuff that we're going to unveil live at MAGFest. But sweet. Harry's coming and visiting from Scotland. So maybe this is the catalyst I needed to just make that mayonnaise that happen so I can just dump it on him at MAGFest.
Hell yeah, man. I'll buy a jar of mayo and bring it with me.
Get like little martini glasses and make like mayo and martinis and be like, it's time to celebrate. And then hand them one and see, watch his face.
Oh my God. Rent out a dunk tank and fill it with mayo and just have that at your booth at MAGFest.
You're just pitching things that I'm already going to do anyway that just happen to fit.
Oh my God. Dark Mika in chat said Miracle Whip is better than mayo. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Is there a way to kick people from chat?
I kind of want to after that.
I mean, Miracle Whip has its place. It's just it's a subpar condiment. You know, like I feel like it's probably really popular at like loser groups and things like that.
Oh my God. No, Miracle Whip does not have a place anywhere. That is the nastiest, nastiest thing I've ever had.
No, as I said that, I could feel my stomach turning.
Oh, man. Just to fuck with Harry, like, turn the zombie into a Miracle Whip zombie for a day.
Joe, I'm so serious about the anti-Harry campaign from hurting my guy Mayo that I just sent you via email one of the recordings, the piece of evidence.
That is awesome. I'm playing that at the end of the episode. Like, after all the music, that's going to be there. So. Oh, man. So before we wrap things up with you, I did want to know, you said that you've had a lot of repeat customers. How many customers have bought all of your games and have the full collection?
That's a great question. Definitely something in the maybe 50 people range.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, I think we have that dedicated core that, like me, they probably buy every game that comes out that looks like they want to play it because there just aren't enough, right? And we scratch that itch a way that other people, you know, maybe don't want to or can't.
Damn.
So it's no different than, I guess, look at it like this. You know, a launch release package for a console might have your, you know, 5 or 10 games on it. Well, every year, if you buy 5 games for your current favorite console, you're doing yourself a small service. And there aren't 5 commercial quality games coming out for the Nintendo, except for us. And there is another group that does awesome stuff called Retrotainment. They did the Haunted Halloween games. So they have some really neat stuff, too.
Nice.
Only get 5 games a year?
Yeah, well, I'm talking about baseline, right? There's a floor and there's a ceiling. So we got to keep this together, Cole. You can't just go right in.
That's the way I function. Everything's just head first.
Head first into the mayo vat.
Yeah, like, I mean... Do I lose bonus points if I mix a little barbecue sauce with the mayo?
I guess it depends on the final application. You know, sometimes it's too strong. It's the reason people have vodka water. I get it. You know?
like if you've got a French fry and you're about to lose some of your mayo off of your burger, then you grab it real quick with the French fry. Is that just a redneck thing? Is it just because I'm fat that I do that? But I don't want to lose the mayo, so it goes on the fry.
I mean, I appreciate the diverse reach of mayonnaise.
Fries and mayo are awesome. I don't care what anyone says. I had one of my good friends came in from the Netherlands a couple of years ago, and before him, I never would have thought of fries and mayo, but like crinkle cut fries with mayonnaise are the best thing in the world.
Yeah. So I like to, like I said, I like to add a little bit of barbecue sauce, but you got to be careful. You can't mix it. That's gross. It's got to be like swirled. And then it's good. If you mix it, it just fucks up everything.
It's just that color swirl in the
middle. Yeah, it's suddenly just condiment mud, and ain't nobody likes that.
Condiment mud with the mayo base.
And then I think Carnage in the chat is actually trying to solicit a game idea because he said Super Mayo Odyssey.
You know what? You're going to have a hard time getting me not to bite on a mayo-themed anything.
Would that cause Harry to just walk out of the company if you made a game centered completely around mayo?
Honestly, he's already on edge with the whole mayonnaise thing because, you know, he's my primary Slack avatar. Like, the reason I use Slack is just to send mayo avatars to people over and over. Like, there's only 2 or 3 emojis I'll use, and they're all, like, mayo variants. So there's not going to be a day that he doesn't live the mayo I need him to live. I just don't know how much tolerance he can have left with hate that strong.
Oh my God. You guys are amazing.
I think it's fear. I think he doesn't talk about it, but I'm pretty sure he just looks at mayo and when he closes his eyes, he can just feel like the claustrophobia of this overwhelming condiment zombie genitalia mix, you know?
Last week on the show, we had our Halloween contest where people had to mail in their worst nightmares they've ever had. I would have loved to hear his.
Yeah, me too.
I was running down a hallway, and behind me, there was a monster chasing me. I didn't know what it was, but I could just smell mayonnaise, and it was Hellman's. I knew it was Hellman's.
Yeah, right. I could just taste the rich deliciousness and creaminess of that mayonnaise. And it turned immediately from a nightmare into a fantasy. And then I woke up happy, refreshed my day.
Oh, man. We could talk forever about mayo. Seriously, like in when it comes to mayonnaise for me, nothing beats a fresh jar where it's like still kind of clumpy instead of the end of the jar where it's like all kind of like, I don't know, not liquidy, but like it's not the same.
You know, we're going to have to follow up like after via email because I have like a whole lifestyle of like different types of homemade mayo using an immersion blender. Like my wife has changed my entire life the last year. Like we refer to it at home as fat sauce, but it's really just mayo variants. It's like mayo plus different seasonings, but it's like it fits anything. Like you can put it on like eggs, burgers, you know, quinoa slaw. Like it doesn't matter if it's good, bad for you. There's always a spot for a mayo variant.
Carnage. So it was not a nightmare. It was a wet dream, a very wet, creamy dream.
You said it. I was thinking it. We're that much closer together now.
God.
On I mean, that I was going to suggest that possibly needed a towel, but I was trying to be a little flat.
Oh my Lord. Well, James, I know you've been on for a while. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about non-mayo related that we didn't already bring up?
I feel like I already exceeded my expectation for what I wanted to talk about, but my intention was to just say hi to the Joe and Cool, you know, viewers. If you're into retro games, check out Mega Cat Studios. We just released 3 awesome NES games. One of them is a chiptune album with a pachinko game and tons and tons of awesome dancing pumpkin man animations. So we actually collaborated with them and set up a killer dancing pumpkin man dancing really well with some like very, I want to say labor intensive rotoscoping for the NES. And then we have Creepy Brawlers, which we touched base on. If you like Punch Out, you're going to love Creepy Brawlers. And then Justice Duel, which is a 4-player couch co-op game. Less than 1% of the NES library worked with the 4-score. So we support that natively. And you get to ride mech eagles as different dead presidents. So you can think of it as a Joust meets Towerfall. You move like Joust, but there's missiles and bombs and bear traps and lots of other cool stuff.
Nice. The music video one, is that the Creeping It Real?
Yeah, Creeping It Real.
That one caught my attention because Danimal's on it.
Yeah, you know, all the tracks in there are so good. Like, Danimal's tracks were awesome. Mitch Foster, our, like, primary sound guy. Mitch is so good at chiptunes now from just, like, pushing himself every week for, like, a solid 2 years. And I just love Halloween. Like, we were talking earlier on the podcast about, you know, our favorite holidays, why we like Halloween. And I just love everything about Halloween, from the music to the costumes and, you know, memories of getting together with friends. So I wanted to take all these killer tracks that we did in Creepy Brawlers and add a few, do a Halloween chiptune album. And I think a lot of chiptune albums are cool, and what they miss is something for you to do while you're playing the game. So we added a really fun kind of trick-or-treat pachinko. And we had the idea to contact the Dancing Pumpkin Man, I feel like it just put the, you know, icing on the cake.
Nice. That's awesome.
I'm pretty sure we're the only person to ever consider licensing the Dancing Pumpkin Man, but I don't regret it at all.
I like, how do you go about licensing that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess one email at a time.
Oh, man. Well, James, it was a pleasure having you on the show. You've definitely got to come back sometime just to talk about more NES stuff and obviously more mayonnaise.
If mayonnaise is there, you can count me in.
So where can people keep up to date with you and everything you're doing?
It's on the website, bottom of the page in the footer, megacatstudios.com. You can subscribe to the newsletter. I promise not to spam you. We send them out once a month. Game updates are in the blog. If you want to see some of the PC stuff we have happening, stay tuned for the main page. Logjammers will be up on Kickstarter in the next 2 weeks.
And I'm sure we'll be retweeting that out when the Kickstarter goes up.
Much appreciated. And if anybody wants to do some testing, I'll give you some free Steam keys. And you can just email our info@megacatstudios.com email address.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks again.
Right. Well, James, thanks again for coming on, and you have yourself a good night.
You too. Adios.
Oh, that was fun. That was ridiculous, too.
Mayo. See, I knew that was going to devolve into mayo.
I love when interviews do that. I love when things just go insane. Those are my favorite kind of interviews. You know, up until we found out that Dark Mika is a Miracle Whip fan. Fuck that.
No more reviews for Mika.
God, that's so gross. That is so freaking gross. Anyway, plenty more stuff to do this episode. News, a lot of news came out this week. Where the hell do we even start? There's so much. let's see. Looking at my list.
I'll fill in the gap.
I guess the biggest news of the week is that the PlayStation Plus lineup for November was announced. PlayStation 3 is getting R-Type Dimensions and Ragdoll Kung Fu. Interesting. PlayStation Vita is getting Broken Sword 5, Episodes 1 and 2, and Dungeon Punks, which is also cross-buy with the PS4. I know I enjoy Dungeon Punks. So.
Wait. Did you say PlayStation 3?
Yeah.
They're still releasing games for the PlayStation 3?
For PlayStation Plus. They're the free games for a month. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got confused. I was like, the fuck just happened there? You were talking about new releases.
No, PlayStation Plus. It's like Games with Gold, but on PlayStation.
My brain is mayo.
Pretty much. And then the PS4 is getting Worms Battlegrounds and the game Bound. So it's, I don't know, an okay month, I guess. They've had a bunch of really good ones, and this one just, I don't know.
I'm a little jelly of Battlegrounds. Wait, don't we have, is that the Worms we have, or is that the new one?
Worms Battlegrounds was the one that came out early in the generation. It's not All-Stars.
Oh, okay. I was confused. I thought it was, of course I'm confused. I thought it was the new one.
Or no, Worms WMD, that's what it is.
Yeah, Worms Battlegrounds. We already got Games with Gold then. Because I know I have, it's the only Worms we have, and I wouldn't have, like, not for any reason. I just wouldn't have bought a Worms game because I'm not familiar with them. But I know I have it, so so it had to be Games with Gold.
Yeah, and as a reminder, Xbox this month is getting Trackmania Turbo and Tales from the Borderlands on Xbox One, and 360 is getting Nights into Dreams and Deadfall Adventures later on this month. So I don't know. Overall, I think it's a fairly even month. PS4 or PlayStation owners get the usual two more games, but I think overall the four we got are better. I think our four are better than their six.
Well, Trackmania Turbo is definitely newer.
Yeah.
As far as releases go, I think I was surprised by that one, just because it's not that old of a game.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Trackmania too.
Not necessarily. I haven't played it yet. I did install it, but I haven't played it yet because I had 7,413 reviews to do. But I was surprised when I saw it. I was like, you know, of course not every game we get is an older game, but that's only, I remember it being released a couple months ago and everybody was going on about how great it was. It caught me off guard for it to be fucking Donovan. For it to be Games with Gold.
Oh, man. PlayStation owners are going to have one more free game to look forward to starting now and through January 2nd. PS4 owners can also get Until Dawn Rush of Blood for the PSVR as a free game. So that's pretty neat as well. Dark Mika in chat, because Carnage made a joke that said, change your show to SMM, scoring more mayo. And Dark Mika asked, does SML really stand for small, medium, large? I know every now and then I'll address it on the show, but it used to. For the first 20 episodes, it was the small, medium, large podcast. Now, officially, unofficially, kind of ish, there's two names. We had a contest way back on episode 20, and the name that was decided was Someone Might Listen. And then for episode 200, we had another contest to rename the show. And the winner was Scoring More Laughs, which won. But I still kind of go back to Someone Might Listen. I think it's just an overall better name. I don't know.
I muted the phone because of the dogs and I forgot to unmute it.
we're just going to hear barking all night.
Yeah, well, number one had a band thing and Dad had to go pick her up. And so now the dogs are like, oh my God, people! We forgot you lived here. It's been 12 hours. Sorry.
some other news this week. We went over Games with Gold and PlayStation Plus. Xbox Game Pass got some new additions for November. a pretty solid lineup of games added to Game Pass with Halo Wars Definitive Edition, Resident Evil HD, Oddworld New and Tasty, Skyforce Anniversary, The World of Van Helsing Death Trap, and Mega Man 9 on the Xbox 360. And then also, they made a note that this is only going to be available until January 31st, but Metal Gear Solid 5 The Phantom Pain was included as well.
It was a pretty big surprise lineup.
That's a hell of a lineup for sure.
I don't know why I keep paying for Game Pass, because I've had it for like 4 months or whatever, and I think I've played one game and I downloaded another and it just sits there. Because I have 7,314,000 reviews. But my husband plays the ever-living shit out of Farming Simulator off of it. And so we just keep paying for it because he loves Farming Simulator, and I probably should have just bought Farming Simulator.
I mean, it's been on sale a bunch.
I know it. And the terrible part is it's 15 because he has 17. He owns 17, but he's been playing 15 because it's on Game Pass. And he completed it on the 360, so he wants to complete it again.
Oh, God.
And husbands. Anyway. But I was surprised to see Metal Gear, because that's a game that he would play. And I have 7,314,000 games to review. But they're not typically the kind of games he plays, with the exception of two this week. So he tends to just, like, look through all 600 of our games and be like, oh, nothing to play. So he was a little excited because he was like, oh, I can finally play The Phantom Pain, which I've wanted for ever since it came out. And I've just been like, I'm not going to buy that. We have 600 games. Play something else. So he's happy to finally install that and play it.
Nice.
It'll be a break from hearing the tractor sounds.
I don't know. He could just go back to hunting.
I've been playing the shit out of hunting.
Nice.
He doesn't get to play it because I'm playing it when I'm not doing 7 million reviews.
Oh, God. Speaking of hunting, did you grab Big Buck Hunter on sale this week for $5?
No, but I did see it, and the sale's not over yet. If he sees it, I'm screwed.
God. I was
like, oh, I have to have that. I'm going to be like,
I was excited because they also have the one Cartoon Network Battle Crasher game or whatever it is, and then the Monster Jam Crush It for $5 each. And the
is there
game...
not a...
Go ahead, what were you going to say?
There's a new Steven Universe game coming out tomorrow.
Yep.
Is that what that's called? Yep. Is that different from the one that's in the Cartoon Network bundle?
What bundle?
The one that's available for $5. Is that not a bundle?
No, it's like a party action fighter game, I think.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not a bundle.
Steven Universe character. Like, I'm not familiar with these characters because I don't watch.
No, that's an older game that's been out for a while that apparently got shit reviews.
How is that different from what's coming out tomorrow? Anyway.
The Steven Universe game coming out tomorrow is supposed to be more like a Paper Mario style RPG.
Yeah, I was watching them play it on the ID at Xbox stream, and it reminded me of South Park, but with less penises.
Fart jokes. That was a fun stream they were doing today, and I say that because I won a copy of Steven Universe on that stream.
Did you win it?
I did. I got the second code they dropped.
Wow. Very nice.
Because I made a point to thank them in the chat, because all the other codes
nobody
they dropped,
thanked.
No one said shit.
Mm-mm.
So nobody ever learn some manners, people. Jesus. But let's see, more news this week. Only one backward compatibility edition this week, but I think it was a pretty solid one. Not necessarily a good game, but it's a fun game. Deadly Premonition.
I saw that. That looks like something I would have played.
You should track it down. It's crazy. It's goofy. It's like a B-movie video game.
B-movies.
Well, there you go. Now you know what to pick
like
up.
Like, the horrible, more cheesy it is, the happier I am. So, yeah, I need to catch that one.
You might have to try tracking it down at GameStop. Amazingly, they did not jack the price up yet. It is still only $10 there.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so...
I wonder if our GameStop is even still open. They were talking about it was going to close.
I don't know.
I don't imagine in a town of, like, I think that town over there has 6,000 people. I don't imagine there's a lot of gamers. Not in redneck land.
Ah, well, what are you going to do? Anyway, let's see. What other news? Nintendo is opening pop-up experiences at 17 different malls around the country starting November 11th through December 17th, where people can try out recent games and presumably actually find the Switch in stock, which is neat. So, 17 different
malls. I don't believe you. I don't believe you that the Switch is going to be in stock.
I don't know. I've been finding it a lot easier.
They'll have one there that everybody can touch and get germy because it's flu season. And well, like some kids are going to snot and sneeze on it and the screen's going to stop working halfway. And I'm incredibly pessimistic about this experience. Holy shit.
If you know anyone who's still trying to find a Switch, like I've helped a handful of friends get them because I've seen them around here.
That's creepy. I haven't been looking for the Switch. I looked for the retro Nintendos because that's what my sister was interested in, but we never were able to find her one. And so that's probably just SOL. We're never going to find one of those. But yeah. We have better luck going to a pawn shop and finding an original Nintendo than trying to get one of the minis.
Oh, boy. The 17 malls that those are going to pop up, it's a pretty decent mix of locations across most of the country. The Perimeter Mall in Atlanta, Georgia, the Nantic Mall in Natick, Massachusetts. There's a town I've never heard of. Mm-hmm. Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg, Illinois. Like they're picking some out of the way places. The Parks Mall in Arlington, Texas. Flatiron Crossing in Broomfield, Colorado, Memorial City Mall in Houston, Del Amo Fashion Center in Torrance, California, the Glendale Gallerina in Glendale, California, the Aventura Mall in Aventura, Florida, the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota, which, you know, obviously it's no going to fucking be there. the Queen Center in Elmhurst, New York. I was excited to see this one. King of Prussia Mall in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, which is like a 2-hour drive for me. So maybe if I get bored, I'll take a trip and see what their pop-up experience is about.
You're going to get bored.
Probably. Arrowhead Town Center in Glendale, Arizona. So we have Glendale, Arizona and Glendale, California. That's interesting. Washington Square in Portland, Oregon, Westfield Valley Fair in Santa Clara, California, Westfield South Center in Seattle, and Tyson's Corner Center in Tyson's Corner, Virginia. So a pretty decent, you know, variety of malls across the country.
But not Kentucky, Ohio, or West Virginia, which is my tri-state area.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Go to King of Prussia. Fuck. Don't be that far.
Virginia. Virginia is probably the closest one.
Maybe.
And watch it be like, I say that, but it's all the way on the other end of Virginia that's not even close to Kentucky.
No.
Because there's one part of Virginia you can be in like 2 hours, and the rest is like 3 days away.
Latino, he asking what stores. They're just standalone pop-up Nintendo store experience things, I guess.
Like a little kiosk, I imagine.
Either that, or you know how like around Halloween time, one random shutdown store in your local mall just opens up a Halloween store? It might be something like that.
Oh.
So, I don't know.
We don't have malls here, Joe. Well,
what them city folk know is malls.
We have strip malls, which are not as exciting as they sound.
Oh, Lord. It's been revealed that Shadow of the Colossus remake on the PS4 is going to be costing $39.99 and releasing on February 6th. So despite how much I hate all fucking PS4 stuff anymore, I'm actually kind of interested to check that out since I love the original on PS2. PS4 Pro owners can also enjoy the game in 60 frames per second, so that's fun. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds was officially announced as a December 12th release date on Xbox One.
As game preview.
Yes, Xbox One game preview. It will cost $29.99, and there will be a, quote, physical edition of the game, which is pretty much just a plastic case with a download code inside. But
which
hey,
is really odd.
It qualifies for 20% off at Best Buy, so bring it on.
It is odd, though. I saw that with Cuphead, and I was like,
I was just going to say, they're going to see that with Cuphead next week, where it's going to be a plastic case, a download code, and then an art cell, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Rocket League. That God.
Sorry.
God damn it. Rocket League is finally hitting the Nintendo Switch November 14th, so I am very excited about that.
Will crossplay be ready to go then?
I have no idea.
Or is that later?
I don't know.
Because that is one of the crossplay games, right?
Yes, it is. That and Minecraft.
So it should be.
It might be ready right out the gate. It might. So who knows? We'll see. And then finally, Nintendo is planning some special holiday releases for the season. Maybe you'll see these at these pop-up locations. Console-wise, they have now a red and white Nintendo 2DS preloaded with New Super Mario Bros. 2 for only $79.99. Also available now is a white and orange new Nintendo 2DS XL for $149. A Pokeball Edition new 2DS XL will be releasing tomorrow the 3rd, or today, if you're hearing the MP3 of this, for $159.99. And then a Link Green 2DS will release on Black Friday for $79.99 with Ocarina of Time 3D pre-installed on it, which looks really nice. It's a really nice shade of green.
I'm typically pretty anti-green, but that does sound... My kids need a new Nintendo to fight over.
it's pretty. And they're only $80, so brave the Black Friday shit storm and...
The first Nintendo DS I got during my first Black Friday experience was many years ago. I don't want to date myself too badly. Many years ago. And Walmart was having them for $89. And I had called and I was like, are you guys going to have enough of these? Are they? And she's like, honey, people started lining up yesterday for that. And I'm thinking, it's a town of 6,000 people. There can't be that many people in line. But D talked me out of it. He's like, no, you have arthritis and I'm not going to go let you sit down and like wait for days when we have a baby at home.
Oh,
she wasn't a baby. She was maybe 5. So I gave up on it. I was like, there's no way I'm going to get one of those pink Nintendos. That's just that. And I didn't go Black Friday shopping until 10 o'clock the next day. And as I was walking through the store, they come over the intercom and they're like, we still have tickets for the pink Nintendo DS and they are available at the paint counter. And I went over, I was like, I want a ticket for a pink Nintendo. And she's like, okay, here you go. And I just walked away.
There you go.
And I had to go up to the eye counter to get it to like where they do the vision center at. And she opened that door and there they were just stacked up to the fucking ceiling. And I spent all night being upset that I wasn't going to get one of these, and I just walked out with it without even trying.
Oh, my God. I guess it helps to live in the boondocks with shit like that.
It really does. Like, that's one of those things. My Walmart gets ridiculous, just like every other one, and yet nobody's ever there. Like, I can't ever get the $4 pajamas for my kids, but my husband walks out with a $100 TV like it was nothing. It's the damnedest thing.
I don't need no goddamn TV.
Right. They people here still have, like, the big floor furniture wood TVs.
Oh, Jesus.
I had one until a few years ago.
Holy shit.
I had one of these. And it just sat there with the regular TV on top of it.
You know what would look great on that TV? That floor model wooden gigantic thing? NES
one
games.
In an NES game.
From Megacat Studios.
You're not wrong.
Last thing from the Nintendo releases thing, they mentioned two different games in the press release. The first, we already know about, the Xenoblade Chronicles 2 Special Edition, which is coming out December 1st for $100, includes a soundtrack CD, a 220-page hardcover art book, which is crazy, and then a metal case. I'm still not a fan that in Europe they specifically say it comes with a steelbook, and in America they say it comes with a metal case. That worries me.
That is different.
Steelbook is like the brand name, the really, really good ones. Like, if you get a steelbook and you get like a metal pack or a generic metal case and look at them side by side, it's basically like name. It's comparing Hellman's mayonnaise to Miracle Whip. Yeah. Generic steel cases suck. And then
I
didn't
even know there were generic ones.
Yeah, you. I don't know. I don't know if you do many collector editions, but you might have something.
No.
Okay, then you don't have something.
I really don't.
And then the last game that they mentioned is that Zelda Breath of the Wild is getting re-released with an Explorer's Edition on Black Friday for $60, same price. Includes the game, a two-sided map, and a 100-page Explorer's Guide. So some free bonuses if you pick up an already amazing game. Unfortunately, the expansion pass is not included in that, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Dark Mika, Miracle Whip is the best. It's the Steelbook of Condiments. Fuck no, it isn't. Someone's getting timed out soon. Keep mentioning that bullshit in our chat room. Fucking Miracle. I'd rather see people saying LOL than saying Miracle Whip tastes good.
I was about to say, it's the LOL of condiments.
Miracle Whip is the LOL of condiments. Perfect. Oh my God. That is so, so accurate. Anyway, that's it for the news. Do you have any news you want to talk about? Anything I missed?
Cole's Black Friday ad leaked, and there's an Xbox One S. It's going to be $190.
Oh yeah, I remember that. $185
full cash.
So if you shop at Kohl's, it's good to pick up.
Yeah, we don't have that here either. But I saw it, and I love Black Friday. I start getting excited about Black Friday in August because I'm weird. Generally, though, where you could see the price be compared to like $145 because of the Kohl's cash, that kind of gives you an idea of what you can expect other stores to try to meet or beat. So you can probably expect that places like Walmart and Target and stuff are going to have Xboxes in that $175 to $190 range with gift cards.
Probably. I honestly wouldn't even be shocked to see some kind of special bundle with the X by then.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. Somebody was saying something about pre-order bonuses for the X where you got three games. And I don't know if that was legitimate
Those are the people something who like won them that. From Taco Bell.
Yeah, something like that I would expect to see as a Black Friday deal. Like, buy an X, get two games or whatever of your choosing from this specific lineup.
Then again, how many times has Microsoft done a buy an Xbox One Now and get any free game of your choice? It's possible they might do something like that again for Black Friday. Yeah. You never know. But
I've said before, I'd love to buy the girls their own Xbox One S so that they leave my Xbox alone. But I have a hard time justifying the full price of it because I'm like, sorry, guys, you all don't get anything else if you get this Xbox. So if, like, you could find that kind of deal where it was $175 or so, it'd be a lot easier to be like, I can get this, and maybe they can get some socks and underwear in their stockings, too.
Yeah, that works. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see. The X is out next week. I am excited. I know for a fact I will be getting one on Tuesday because I gave up on Amazon. As of tonight, Thursday night, they still did not have any kind of, like, estimate arrival date. Like, it's pre-ordered. You'll get this on Tuesday. And there have been people on Reddit saying, like, yeah, I just got a shipping update from Amazon. I'm not getting it till fucking December.
I had seen something about them overselling. That it was an Amazon problem that had oversold, and like it was just up in the air if people were even going to get theirs.
Yeah. So I was at GameStop earlier today because I went to go pick up Deadly Premonition, obviously. And they told me that they were going to have four Scorpio edition extras.
Oh.
So if anyone out there is still hoping to track down a Scorpio edition or just an Xbox One X in general, it can't hurt to call your local GameStop and see if they may have gotten any extras. No guarantee that they did, but, you know, it's possible. Some of the more high traffic stores might have gotten an extra case or two of systems. I think there's two in a case, and they said they had two extra boxes come in. So I'm taken care of. That's all I care about.
I will be mercilessly trying to win one.
Nice. Well, you should have ate more Taco Bell.
I did eat Taco Bell a couple of times just to I typically only eat Taco Bell once every 3 or 4 months or so. And I think I ate like a year's worth of Taco Bell for me during that span. And I did not win. And it was funny too, because I'd set an alarm to wake me up. So I was putting in the codes at like absurd hours when there would be less traffic. Still didn't win. I was like, fuck everything. I could have just slept.
Yeah, I didn't win either. What are you going to do?
Try to win from other sources.
Now, I know what we're going to do. We're going to do some reviews because we got plenty of games to talk about tonight. Are you ready for these?
Let's review.
Okay. First game to talk about tonight is called Spin Tires Mud Runner, developed by Saber Interactive, published by Focus Home Interactive and Maximum Games. Released October 31st on Xbox One and PS4 for $39.99, on Steam for $29.99. Spin Tires Mud Runner is the ultimate version of the million-seller indie hit Spin Tires. Like Spin Tires before it, Mud Runner puts players in the driver's seat and dares them to take charge of incredible all-terrain vehicles venturing across extreme landscapes with only a map and a compass as guides. Cole, what is Spin Tires Mud Runner?
I am incredibly surprised this game had such a successful run. Not because it's bad or anything, but just because it seems like such a niche game genre. Mm-hmm. Like, my husband is all about this kind of shit. The games that are logging and farming and, you know, cutting trees and moving around wood, for whatever reason, that's just his thing. And so I think he's weird, and I don't think other people play these games. And then I go to do research on this one, and it's like, oh, it was, you know, wisely successful. And I'm like, the fuck are these people? Who was playing this game? Not just my husband. So it, like I said, it is a logging simulator. And when I use the term simulator, I mean, this is a simulator. Every way that the vehicles move around the environment affects the environment. And you can't just take the same path because you will bury yourself up to the axles. You will get stuck. You will need a winch. You will fail with the winch. You will make the mud worse, and then you'll have to be embarrassed yourself and call for a rescue. That's Mud Runners. That was my experience with Mud Runners, and it was not good.
Okay, what was Dee's experience with Mud Runners?
Who is much better at these kind of games, thoroughly enjoyed it. He knew what he was doing. At first, I didn't have the problem that he had with overcorrecting the vehicles while trying to maneuver through the forest. Like, for some reason, I was just able to stay on the path and be fine. And he was struggling a lot to overcorrect initially, and he wasn't really enjoying himself. And then it just kind of caught on to him that, hey, I actually drove these vehicles in real life, and I know better than this. And then he did fine. Because this, the kind of, these are, the vehicles in Mud Runners are military-style vehicles. So, I mean, we're talking, you know, all-wheel drive and no power steering. and just, these are tough vehicles to maneuver in good circumstances. And especially when you're in a game that has put so much realism and attention to detail in the mud physics. If you're not careful, you will find yourself overly frustrated until you really manage to learn how to maneuver it. Thankfully, the tutorial is short and doesn't really tell you a whole lot except for the very, very basics of, like, this is how you lock your differential, this is how you change gears, this is how you use the winch, good luck. Thankfully, there's a challenge mode. Challenge mode is more of an advanced tutorial and actually helps you learn how to maneuver around and how to get yourself out of the situations where you will inevitably be stuck up to the mud in your axles. Like me. And Dee did it too. I didn't fail all on my own. He messed up too. The goal is basically to deliver loads of lumber, the trees that have been cut for lumber. So you want to move these logs. The larger your log size, the more points you get for it. And when you deliver, make a successful delivery, you can then use your points to unlock additional lumber mills and garages and things around the world. These are insanely large worlds to maneuver around as well. And like I said, everything you do leaves a permanent mark. So it's constantly changing based on the types of equipment that you have used.
That's
and
really cool.
How well you maneuvered around it. Like I said, the attention to detail in it is just absolutely amazing. And you really, there's a free play mode, there's a career mode, but you really don't want to jump into anything until you've mastered the challenge mode. Because then you know that, you know, whatever you get stuck in, you can get your way out of. And you're less likely to have to get rescued. There's a lot of micromanaging, not just how you load your vehicle and not just how you move it around or what type of vehicle you use, but also even just watching things like whether or not you're using your differential, whether or not you have enough fuel to make the trip that you're going to attempt. You can get stuck in the middle of the woods and be out of gas, and it's a bad thing.
Oh, God.
And you will be penalized for having to be rescued and taken back to a garage. Ask me how I know.
How do you know?
Because my bitch ass got stuck.
Shocking. Shocking revelation. I did not see that answer coming. That's a Shyamalan twist.
Right? But it is very simulation heavy, and it is niche, but it's incredibly well done.
I was going to say, I've seen like nothing but good coming from people talking about this mm-hmm. game, except for the people who went into this thinking this was like an off-road racing game.
Yeah, which is what I thought at first, and then I watched David play it, and I was just like, what did I get myself into? He was thrilled. Once he figured it out, he was thrilled, and I'm just like, I thought this was going to be like, I heard Mud Runners, and I thought four-wheelers and no. dirt bikes, and my redneck came out. I didn't know.
So this is a game for fans of stuff like Farm Simulator, not for people looking for Baja off-road HD.
Yeah, you're not Forza Horizoning your way through this forest. It is slow and it's meticulous, and there's a lot of strategy and planning involved.
Nice. So for $40, your verdict?
I give it a solid try. It's really good, but it is a niche type game, and it's not going to be for everybody.
Totally makes sense. All right, next game to talk about is called God of Light Remastered, developed and published by Playmus. It released October 20th on Xbox One for $9.99, hitting Steam November 8th. Join Shiny on his way to saving the universe from the impending darkness. Your goal is to explore game levels, seek for game objects that reflect, split, combine, paint, and bend, and teleport rays of light energy to activate the sources of life and bring light back to the universe. Featuring a remastered soundtrack by electronic music icon Uncle. This is pretty much a light reflecting puzzle game where you are Shiny and you emit a beam of light, and you have to eventually get your beam of light to cross over three different crystals and then hit like a final gate target ending goal looking thing. And, you know, it starts off easy enough where you'll reflect it off a mirror and then it hits the target and then, hey, you're all done. You move on. Things get a lot more complicated and complex as it goes with branching paths. You're going to have to eventually like be able to move and rotate mirrors. You're going to have to, there's mirrors that like slide up and down. You're going to have to activate crystals to open doors, to shine your light through other doors, to move other things. The game picks up really quick, but it's a really, really fun game because it's always keeping you thinking. You get rated based on how many of the crystals you collect at the end of the stage. I originally thought it was time related because they do show you how long it took you to complete a stage. But I then realized I was always getting 3 stars or 3 crystals on a stage because I made sure to collect everything before I exited the stage.
So collecting was valued more over just doing it quickly.
Yeah, this wasn't a game about speed through and do it as quick as you can. And I appreciate games that let you just go at your own pace and figure things out as you go. The big twist is that the levels are pretty much all dark. You can faintly see around your character, around Shiny, And where you shine the beam of light, you'll illuminate where you're passing around. You know, if there's walls near you, you could see those. If there's just nothing, you won't see anything. If you need some help, like if just turning your beam of light around the stage isn't helping you figure out what you have to do, you can use, they have like little fireflies that you could collect in stages, and you can activate a firefly to just fly around the stage and illuminate the stage for as long as you have collected fireflies. Every stage has a firefly that you could collect, and of course there's an achievement for collecting all of them. And as you collect them, that gives you more time to use the fireflies. The thing is, they don't replenish, so you have to make use of them wisely. Instead,
is there any penalty? Is there any penalty to like your final rating? You said 3 crystals or 3 stars. Is that affected if you use a firefly?
Not that I know of, but I have tried to not use them. I've been trying to do this all myself. No peeking, no guides. I'm trying to, you know, do it all me.
Mr. Legitimate.
That's how I am with puzzle games. I like doing that. As much as I'm enjoying the game, I do have some gripes with it. The first is that rotating your beam of light is frustrating. I at first thought that you had to go like turn left and right to move the character left and right, but it seemed more like you use the analog stick to point in the direction that the light is and then rotate it slowly to kind of stick with where it is. Otherwise, it throws off where you're aiming as to where you think you're... It was just really weird trying to figure out which way I was supposed to be turning things. And then when you're holding in a direction, you're trying to fine-tune it. Just moving a hair left or right makes the beam of light fly in every direction, it seemed. You can fine-tune it with the triggers that are just straight up left and right from where you are. The problem is the speed at which things rotate. When you first start moving the beam of light, it moves way too slow. When you're fine-tuning it, it still moves like slower than it really should. But once it starts moving, it starts going way too fast. So you'll either constantly not hold the direction long enough to get a good speed going, or you'll overshoot where you're trying to aim. The other problem I had was you use the right analog stick to switch between the different mirrors or shiny itself to readjust everything. And I had tons of problems. Like, I'm hitting directions on the analog stick and it would just never seem to go where I wanted it to go. I don't know if they would be able to look at some kind of like mouse style control. So instead of just switching from item to item, you're like moving a circle around so you can make sure you could see what you're trying to, I don't know. I'm not sure what kind of solution there could be to make it more intuitive or more comfortable to control, but I had issues with it. Overall for $10, I still really enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun. It's beautiful game. The soundtrack is incredible, as you would expect from Uncle. A lot of stages in there, a lot of collectibles, a lot of replay value. For $10, I got to give it a hearty try it, but I would love to see the control issues addressed a little bit to either get rid of how fast and how slow the directional changing goes, or to at least, I don't know, make it so that whatever direction you're pressing the analog stick is where you are instead of a slow rotation. I don't know how they could make it better, but as it is, it's just, it gets frustrating after trying to get a light to point a certain direction and it just doesn't go where you want it to because you keep overshooting it.
Yeah.
But even still, a lot of fun. I really, really dug it.
Nifty.
Next game is called Nightmare Boy, developed by the Vanir Project, published by Badland Games. It released October 25th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $12.99. Nightmare Boy is a Metroidvania action-adventure 2D game where you'll meet weird and unique friends and foes, but tread carefully, quirky creatures and their reactions can have game-changing consequences. Be prepared to collect rare items, vanquish enemies, and eventually face your deepest fears. Cole, what did you think?
I didn't feel like the game was much like that at all. I really didn't feel like Nightmare Boy was what I was expecting. It's very, not really run. Yeah, I guess run and gun more. Like it's got some platforming, and you basically just move through tunnels and different rooms and stuff to find bosses. You play as a character who is kidnapped. I could not begin for the life of me to pronounce the names in this game. This is Ponkapu times 10.
Oh, God.
So I couldn't... Oops, I dropped my book, too. I couldn't begin to good hands, feet, to begin pronouncing these names. But he's kidnapped and taken to a world full of nightmares. And he's often mistaken for being a prince that was killed by a king trying to stay in power. From what I got through of the story, it seems as if he was trying to be used as a pawn to convince a queen that her son was not killed. And that was the purpose for choosing him. He was the right height and everything. I would love to say I got to experience the game in full, but there is a manual save system. And basically what it is you will, as you explore, you'll occasionally come to a room where there's like a Grim Reaper doing something in the background, and you have to press up on the D-pad to save. Every time I played, I did this repeatedly, and I kept carrying on as if, oh yeah, I saved it, and I did really well. And then I would close the game down, and I would come back, and I would have no save. And I would be right back at square one again. This happened a dozen times. I would continuously make it past the first three or four bosses, and then go back to it, you know, a couple hours later after I'd fixed dinner or whatever, and be right back at square one. For all intents and purposes, the process of saving should be fairly clear. There's not a lot of directions in the game at all, but it does say, you know, press up on the D-pad near the Grim Reaper to save. I did it a million times, and I could not save my game for anything.
Did like a window pop up prompting you to save or anything
Nothing.
Like that?
There's like a D-pad, an animated D-pad will be in the room. And I've tried standing in front of it. I've tried standing off to the side of it. I've tried standing by the doors. I've tried jumping around it, pressing up every which way but left. I can't trigger it to save.
Have you seen anyone else having the same issue, or is it?
Nobody has completed it. So that's pretty alarming. Course two. One of the there's achievements for completing it without dying and for completing it without saving. And I kind of feel like even though I was on easy, the game was like, fuck you, you don't need to save. And I did need to save. I didn't die, you know, during my playthroughs. I was fairly successful. I was unlocking extra abilities as I progressed. I just would have to shut down and come back and be at the beginning again.
That's weird.
But despite that, for what I got to play, it was actually really good. It was really well done. The pixel art style, there is so much detail in the art of this game. And that
it has a trippy visual style, for sure.
Yeah, it's not something I typically get to say about a pixel art game. Normally, my complaint with pixel art is there's not enough detail. I'm not saying that here, because right down to patterns in fabric on curtains in the background, is just every little dot is pristine. And it's really, really impressive. And it creates this charming, albeit kooky and you know, weird and not necessarily terrifying, even though you're kind of supposed to get the impression that it would be scary for kids. It's just this incredible world, and it's paired with this wonderful soundtrack and all of the lore. There's so much attention to it, and it's really creative. I just didn't get to experience it. So for everything that it does have, it does it well.
I'm going to have to, after the show, I'm going to have to look around, see if anyone else has had that issue, and see if it's a known problem, or if you just don't know how to save a game.
Do you know how many times I break games? If you can break it, I will break it. And I did look around to try to find, I couldn't even find like other reviews and stuff to see if anybody had the same problem. I was just like, well, this is just me. Okay. You know, so I really enjoyed it, and I'd like to make it further.
Yeah.
And Steam was the, I couldn't find any other like statements about it on Xbox at all. I could find people on Steam and they were like, oh yeah, I'm about 75% server, it's fine. But that's the difference between Steam and Xbox. Like, is this just something that I'm failing with, or, you know, did I goof somewhere? Do I not know how to push up on the D-pad in a room with a Grim Reaper?
Very possible.
Specific requirement to say.
We know you break everything, so
I do. But like I said, there's really creative monsters that you'll encounter. The bosses are interesting. I was playing on easy because I'm this is not my skill set in a game at all, and I was doing incredibly fine. I was just, you know, getting through the bosses without dying even. Yay me! You know, there are other children that are stuck in the world that haven't been converted as you have, but they are there and they are caged, and you can save them, and doing so gives you additional powers. Like, one gives you the ability to wall climb, for example, and it opens up new areas of the world, Metroidvania style, that you couldn't have got to before. So it's really creative. It's a really impressive world. It's really unique art style. The music, like I said, is wonderful. It's just, I got stuck. So for all of that, I do give it a solid try it, because I'm somehow not convinced that this is like a common thing and that maybe I just really suck at pushing up.
It's possible. If there is an issue with the game, I'll investigate this. If there is a problem that's being addressed, we'll make sure to update on your show. If it turns out that, Cole, you're just bad at games and don't know how to save, then we won't talk about it.
I mean, everybody has their time. You know, ask me about point and clicks, I'm fine. But if I have to actually find a room with a Grim Reaper to keep saving my progress, that shit gets a little shady.
Nice.
Now we're getting into too many steps. But I do give it a solid try. I was really interested and wanted to see where it was going to go.
Nice. Sounds good. Moving on. Next game to talk about is called 99 Vitas. Not Vita, like PlayStation Vita. Vita, like V-I-D-A, like life. 99 Vitas, developed and published by Cubite Interactive. It released November 2nd on Xbox One for $9.99. Previously available on Steam and on PlayStation. 99 Vitas is a beat-em-up set in a contemporary world that pays tribute to both the new and the classic in gaming industry. Brought to you an all-in pixelated 16-bit-esque glory chock full of references to not only gaming, but all 80s and 90s pop culture, 99 Vitas takes full advantage of modern-era gameplay mechanics, making it the best of both worlds. This is a side-scrolling beat-em-up very much in the vein of like Streets of Rage, Final Fight. You pick one of four different characters, you go through six different stages, beat up all the enemies, beat up a mid-boss, beat up more enemies, beat up a final boss, move on to the next level. In between stages, you can go to a shop and you can upgrade some of your abilities based on how many points you've earned through the stages. You don't upgrade your stats, you just upgrade like the combos and abilities that you can do and make them stronger, more powerful. There are also two bonus stages you could go to that, instead of being like pixelated style visuals, I mean, they're still pixelated, but instead of like going through a cityscape, you're in like, one of them is a sketchbook style world, which is really cool. And then the other is like a VR hyper futuristic style world, which is really cool. All the enemies have like blue shadow shading on them. It really, really cool visual tricks in it. So there's plenty enough replayability in going through the stages and trying to up the abilities for all of the characters. There's also five extra characters you could unlock through the game, so a total of nine. Plenty of characters to work on. Tons of achievements in the game. Like, there's some weird achievements in there, too. I think the one was, like, beat the game without dying, which, holy shit. Comes to one of my issues with the game. The game itself isn't that difficult. The bosses are motherfuckers in this game. I don't know any other way to put it. The bosses in this game are motherfuckers. They just seem to like hit you with undodgeable attacks sometimes. They have weird quirks that you have to attack them only at very specific times. I know the one boss, Like he throws barrels up in the air. And if you try attacking him at any time, you'll get like one attacking and then he'll do like an area of effect burst attack that just knocks you back and does a lot of damage. You're supposed to wait until he picks up a barrel to dump on himself because he has to oil himself up for some reason. And that's when you jump in and get a combo attack going and then he'll be stunned and you just take a big chunk of his life away. The problem is, like, I would jump in on some of those, hit him once or twice, and then he would still do the little area of effect attack and knock me back for some reason. And I don't know why. Like, I'm attacking him when I'm supposed to attack him, but I don't know.
But he's still able to retaliate.
Yeah, I don't. Some of the bosses are just weird. There's just weirdness with some of the bosses. Like, they're not as intuitive as the rest of the game. It felt like a lot of trial and error in trying to figure out when to attack bosses, when not to attack them, how to dodge everything properly, stuff like that. The final boss in the game, spoiler, sorry, there's a final boss in addition to the final boss. That's how all these fucking games are. I couldn't beat him. I had 6 lives going into the final battle and I still died. He had like, the final boss comes down like rock, paper, scissor attacks. And the scissors is like a little handle come out and start chasing you around and you have to fight and kill the hand. The rock was like, he'll slam his 2 arms down. And if you're standing on the ground, it'll stun you and do some damage. So you have to jump and time it right. When he does paper, he does some kind of gigantic, insane, special magic attack. And I don't know how to defend against it. I don't know if I'm not hitting him enough to stun him from doing the attack, but anytime he does that, it's nearly always an instant kill. If you are missing any health at all, you're dead. So I don't know how to deal with that attack. I've tried fighting the guy a few times. The worst was that the 6th stage is a fairly long stage because, you know, these kind of brawlers on the last stage, you always have to fight a bunch of bosses over again before the final boss. So it's like, go through an area, kill a boss, go through an area, go through another area, kill a boss, go through an area, another area, kill a boss, go through an area, another area.
So how many controllers did you break?
Thankfully none, because I don't throw controllers. When your controller costs $150, you don't throw them.
You get really frustrated and you think very closely about it, though.
Yeah, but it took so long to get back to that final boss that I only tried him twice. So I do want to, like, I have a plan. I want to start it back up, use the character that I've upgraded, because once you upgrade a character, it's like a permanent unlock. He is upgraded for good. Otherwise, if you go to like a stage select, any lives you've had, any score that you had saved up gets wiped over, like starting fresh. So my plan is to go to stage select, go to the bonus stages, which you can earn like 20,000 points on each stage. Go through one, go through 2 of them maybe, and then buy a shitload of lives from the store. And then go fight this final boss with like a stockpile, like 15 lives. I want to take that motherfucker down.
You can do it.
On top of that, something else cool this game has, it has online multiplayer. 4-player online. So it's a fun as hell beat 'em up, good visual style, lots of shit to do, bosses that'll piss you off, online gameplay, and it's only $10. Buy this fucking thing.
Nice.
It's awesome. Good stuff. Any questions?
No.
Cool. Buy the game. Next game to talk about is called Real Farm, developed by Triangle Studios, published by Sedesco, released October 20th on Xbox One, Steam, and PS4 for $39.99. It is also planned to be coming to the Switch as well. Grow your way to success in Real Farm, the most immersive agricultural sim around. Explore the countryside and make it yours. Start from nothing or take on a working farm. Manage the land, crops, animals, and staff, and reap the riches you sow. Cole, it's farming. We know you're covering it. Let's hear it.
I feel like this is stereotyping,
it is.
Joe.
It is very much is.
Okay, so again, with this kind of game, I tag-teamed it with my husband. He plays most of it. I play some, but just because if the controllers are shit, I kind of need to know that firsthand. But they're not shit. Yay! he really enjoyed it. He did say that it's not as good as some other games, although graphically it stands out because this game is in 4K.
Ooh.
4K farming. Holy hell. We are in the golden era of games. it really does look incredible, though. There are a few times where the textures are noticeable that they're not that great, but when you're just casually playing it and you're not actively looking like, does that look like a 4K tire or do I just want it to look like a 4K tire? If you're just playing, you're just going to be like, wow, this is actually really pretty. And it is. It really is pretty. And that's probably its greatest aspect. It is a simulator. So again, we're in the world where every little detail is taken into consideration. You can't just hook up to whatever piece of equipment is laying around. The equipment has to match whatever you're trying to, whatever crop you're trying to grow or whatever type of livestock you're trying to tend to. It all has to match. And you can't just like hook up to it and be gone. You have to consider, is this too heavy for my tractor? Can my tractor pull this? Do I need to balance the tractor by adding a weight to the front or back in so that I'm not riding around doing wheelies while trying to sow some wheat? In addition to that, once you are actually in a field, you have to, you know, pay attention. Am I sowing to the left? Am I sowing to the right? Do I actually have the equipment set up properly so that the seeds will fall out of it, for crying out loud? Because I've plowed a whole field and seeded it and my equipment was closed.
Oh, God.
And D made very much fun of me, as he should have. So, and it's just a mundane thing that, you know, even with other farming sim games, you're like, okay, well, I hooked up and I'm just going to go. You can't do that. You have got to stop and pay attention to, you know, where's my equipment at? In other games, you may have a case where if you go off of the plot of soil where you're supposed to be planting, then nothing happens. But with this, if you have your, I call it a drag. If you have your drag down, it's still going to tear up the dirt. So that's something to think about. Like, if you want a nice looking field, or if you're plowing a field for somebody in the game, like during the career mode, you're not going to want to have every track you've made around the farm laid out behind you. So you have to stop and pull the equipment in. Make your turn, put the equipment back down, then make a pass through the field, then do it again, put it up, make your turn, put it back down, go again. It can get a little monotonous, but that whole aspect of being strategic and thinking about how you're going to do everything, again, maintaining your fuel and your equipment, you know, do I need this piece of equipment enough to justify spending the money to buy it? Can I just rent it for a day or two? All that comes into play. In addition to that, there is an actual legitimate economy going on inside this game. So you can plant a certain type of produce and put it away and store it. Say the price is very low for wheat. And then something happens in the market and your competitors push the price of wheat up. They stop producing wheat. Wheat goes up. You can go and then sell your wheat for a higher price. If other players that do that as well, they're going to drive the price of the wheat back down again. So this is a legitimate, you know, economy, and you need to be mindful of it when you are planting. You can do a career mode or you can do free play. And the economy, it's going to affect you in career mode as well, because there are times where you need to earn a set amount of money or whatever to progress. But in free play is where it really, really shines, because everything you do is dependent upon, is it going to be worth it in the economy? Is it worth it to buy this equipment and prepare a field and spend the time to grow this crop, and then only for the price to go down on it and it not be valuable anymore?
Interesting. So it's not just a straight up farming game. There's a lot more to it.
There's a whole lot of, especially, I think the economy aspect is the biggest seller for this. I mean, it's 4K farming, but the economy is really what changes it and is most impressive about it for me. So I do think that affects whether or not it's more of a buy it or a try it. And I lean more toward a buy it because of that. That's just a unique way to play.
Yeah. Interesting. I know the game has been getting kind of mixed reviews on Steam. it seems like some people just aren't digging the differences between this and Farming Sim. How would you compare the two?
One of the biggest things that most people seem to complain about is like the way the vehicles handle and their turning radiuses and things like that.
Do they expect the fucking tractor to turn on a dime? What do you?
And they do, and in Farming Sim they kind of do, and they really shouldn't. Like, one of our biggest problems with the Farming Simulator games is that, you know, it's so easy to get your trucks jackknifed or get hung up in really weird areas around trees or whatever, just because they give you far too much freedom with movement. This puts more focus on the simulation aspect, and you need, we have a running joke, give me 40 acres and I'll turn this rig around. You need that room to maneuver these vehicles because you're not going to be able to turn on a dime, but it also prevents you from doing dumb shit that gets you stuck.
Yeah. Like in Spin Tires where he got stuck. Although we might have to update that saying from give me 40 acres to give me 4 cakers.
Oh, no.
If Carnage is still in chat, I hope he enjoyed that one.
Fuck K4. So,
K4K? 4Canage. We'll call him that from now on. So overall, yeah, you're going leaning kind of middle between try and buy.
Yeah, it's a very high try it to, like I said, it's niche, and it's hard to say, oh yeah, buy it, because it's not for everybody. It really isn't just something that everybody's going to pick up and be like, oh, this is awesome. But if you like that kind of strategy and simulation and micromanaging, you're going to enjoy it.
Nice. Sounds good. Well, this is the part in the show where I have a pre-recorded review with Tim Ekibis to do, so transition. All right, next game to talk about is called Time Recoil, developed and published by 10 Tons. It released October 26th on the Nintendo Switch for $13.99. Punch through walls, guns blazing while time slows down, see your enemies drop down like flies, and save the world from a mad scientist dictator. Time Recoil is a story-driven top-down shooter with a slow motion twist. We have our friend Tim Ekibis covering this one. Tim, how are you doing, sir?
I am doing well, sir.
How is Halloween?
It was fun. My child had fun and got candy, even though my neighbors are stingy bitches.
Stingy bitches?
Yeah, just not a lot of people giving candy. It's weird, because like where I grew up, like, you know, in my neighborhood growing up, there was like, I don't know, maybe a half dozen kids in the whole neighborhood. Huh. And we'd all go around in a pack, pretty much. So it's like
the trick-or-treat kids still, are here.
Yeah. But still, just about everybody in the neighborhood would have candy and would be, you know, giving stuff out. And here I live in the city and there's like tons of kids going around and there was like nobody on my block was giving out candy. And that's, it was just shitty. Like, what the? Come on, man. Come
Did
on.
You dress just, up?
I was like a casual Pokemon trainer, yes. A little bit. Well, my child was a Pikachu.
Ah. I hear the words casual Pokemon trainer. I'm just like, oh, so you went out in jeans and a t-shirt.
Yeah, basically with the hat. I mean,
the
I had
hat changes everything.
That was really what completed the costume.
What kind of Pokeball was it?
No, I didn't have a Pokeball. I had a Pokemon.
I thought you said Pokeball. I was going to be was it one of those old Pokeballs from Burger King when we were in like high school when they gave out Pokeballs with like golden cards in them?
No.
Why do I remember that?
Don't know.
Anyway, Time Recoil.
Anyways, yeah, Time Recoil. I was like, wait, what are we here to talk about? I forgot. That's so weird.
What'd you think of Time Recoil?
It's okay. And that's the review.
That's it. That's all you got to say.
No. It's so, you know, it's, I mean, a lot of this comes out of the fact that, you know, I played Judge a couple weeks ago, and Judge is just way better than Time Recoil from the same developer. They're both overhead kind of twin stick shootery things. The twist in this game is that when you shoot a guy, you get a few seconds of slow motion where the whole environment slows down, but you keep moving. Like, that's your super time powers that you're using to defeat the evil Mr. Time, which is a great name for a time-based villain. Not Dr. Time, it's Mr. Time, who did something and destroyed... Oh, that's right. He destroyed Paris in 1978, and this game is taking place... The present is like 1987 or 88, 89, something like that. And you're going back in time. You've been rescued by this resistance movement, and they're sending you back in time to try to recruit scientists and kill people and steal things in order to take down Dr. Mister. He didn't spend, you know, 4 years in Mister school to be called Doctor. yeah, Mister Time there. yeah, so that's kind of the plot. That's what's going on. Usually you'll drop back kind of into your HQ between missions, and then, you know, they give you a quick little blurb about, okay, good job, here's the next thing, da 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 da, and then you do like six missions, and then they're like, you're like, okay, go to sleep. So you're just popping out and doing all this stuff over the course of like a day or a week or whatever. Just like, yep, you could just do 5-6 time travel missions a day, these violent encounters, and then just come back, just do, you know, just roll out, do another one, whatever. It's just time, man. So yeah, you use your time powers, you slow down time, so that lets you like build up combos, and as you build up combos, like you get bonus abilities basically, and they kind of dole these out arbitrarily. It's just like you'll enter a mission, it'll be like, oh hey, now if you get a 4-string combo, you get this power, which you'll need to beat this level, and like, oh here's this 6, you know, once you get a 6 level combo, you get this power, you can use this ability, and oh, you'll need that to beat this level, by the way. So that was kind of like, you know, for being a story-based, story-driven game, according to them, like just having arbitrary time powers dropped on you at the beginning of levels, like where you just needed to use them was kind of, I don't know, silly. Just felt, nah, whatever. That's the only progression there really is. It's just when they decide to give you like a random new ability. There is, for the most part, you're just using like a handgun. There's not a lot of weapon variety. Like as you get in, like sometimes levels will have kind of like a submachine gun or like some other stuff, but you know, when you're slowing down time, it doesn't make that much of a difference, I didn't feel like. But those are, they felt pretty sparingly, like it was not very common to have these different weapons. But you know, as you get going in the game, like it is fun to shoot a guy, have time slow down and like dodge his bullet, shoot the guy next to him, burst into the next room, shoot that guy, then use like your time dash ability that bashes through a wall to go through a thin wall and kill a guy on the other side. Like that's fun stuff to do. And see, there's a lot.
I don't know how you could say that and just be like, the game, it was okay. Well, I guess,
well,
cause you
I'll
play Judge
there. And I'll get there.
I didn't play Judge, so I can't compare them.
There is. Yeah. But it's really fun. Like the way that the environments destruct is really fun. So there can be quite a bit of chaos going on as you're shooting things. Things are blowing up. You're bashing through walls. Time's slowing down. Even with time slowing down, though, I kind of felt like some of it was partially like I felt like frames were dropping and there was like maybe a little bit of slowdown in the system. Sometimes it's hard to tell when the time mechanic is a deliberate part of the game.
Yeah.
But the thing is just that Judge, you know, having just played Judge, there's a ton of variety in Judge, a ton of different weapons and abilities to mess around with and different objectives to go for. And Time Recoil definitely feels like a lot smaller of a game in that, you know, each level is smaller, has kind of your one main objective, and you don't really have a lot of variety when it comes to your abilities in mechanics. It's just you have the time slowdown effect, and that's kind of really it. There's like a little bit of extra dressing around the side that kind of rolls out here and there, but it got repetitive pretty quickly. It was like really fun at first, like those first few levels I was like, oh fuck yeah, and then, you know, another like 20 levels into the game I was kind of like, yeah, okay, all right, you know, it's okay.
So probably something better suited for like quick bursts of gameplay instead of a 2-hour marathon. Oh yeah,
definitely. Which is good for portables, but you know, when evaluating it as a purchase for the Switch system, if you are looking for an overhead action twin stick shootery game, y'all should be playing Judge. And the good thing is I don't even have to feel bad about that because the same company gets your money.
Yeah.
But you should be playing Judge because Judge is better.
That's a nice ringing endorsement for Judge and 10 tons as a company.
So. Yeah. But you know, if you've played through Judge and you're looking for a little something else, then, you know, maybe just,
sounds,
you know,
good. Yeah. I know I enjoyed it on Xbox. Everyone has been talking about how good Judge is, and it's probably one of the best 10 ton games put out there. And I really, really, really need to make time to play Judge because everyone is praising it like crazy.
Yeah. It's a good game, man.
But yeah, so thanks for covering. I was going to ask what your verdict is, but you kind of already gave it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a try it.
What's your verdict on Time Recoil? Get
it's,
Judge.
It's kind of a try it. Yeah, try it after Judge, maybe. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Get judged first, Recoil later.
And to be fair, 10 Tons has been putting out a lot of games on the Switch recently, so.
Yeah, they've been, like, just dropping their back catalog on it. There's been, like, a game from them, like, every week or two.
I know, so they probably already have a lot of your money the way it is.
Yeah.
But, Tim, thank you for talking about Time Recoil and, absolutely. And about Halloween. I was going to say Thanksgiving, but we're still a little bit away from that.
Yeah. Well, my neighbor's already got a turkey up.
Really? They didn't just go straight to the Christmas turkeys. Tree?
No, and bless them for that. there's a whole month in between now and Christmas season.
Yeah.
It starts the day after Thanksgiving. Not on Thanksgiving, not before Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving. Then it's like, okay, Christmas. But the thing is, like, Thanksgiving's really early this year. It's actually the earliest day in November it could possibly be. It's the 23rd.
Really?
Yeah. So there's like a whole week of November after Thanksgiving, and like it's really going to mess with people. It does every time it's like that.
Interesting.
Yep.
I didn't realize that's the last day of November.
The last day of November is the 30th, which is a Thursday, a week after Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Nifty. It's what, Thanksgiving is the fourth Thursday?
It's like the third Thursday. Or yeah, no, it's the fourth.
So wouldn't the 22nd
it's the third Thursday.
Be one third. Day earlier?
Well, I think it's the third Thursday. I don't know. It has to be like, yeah, it's the third Thursday because, because it could be the fourth, because it could be on the 20th. This is great conversation for a video game podcast.
Seriously, we are calendar. Okay. We are the SML calendar cast.
Because like it can't be, yeah, I know that, but why is Thanksgiving there?
Okay, so it's the 23rd, which is the fourth Thursday of the month.
But, like, it wouldn't be on it wouldn't be on the 30th, but there has to be, like, a day of December or a day of November after it.
Yeah.
It is the fourth Thursday in November. Is that the fourth Thursday?
Yeah, it is. So that means it could be the 20th. Oh, it could happen on a 22nd if the first was on a Thursday.
No shit.
Huh. So it's not the latest it could, or it's not the earliest it could be. It's close.
Well, it's pretty darn close.
We're getting there. Maybe next year.
No.
I don't know.
Wait, maybe. Yeah, actually, hang on. When is Thanksgiving 2018? It's on the 22nd next year.
Fuck yeah. Next year's the year, man.
It's the most fucked up year.
We did it, Reddit.
You probably just quit.
Well, Tim,
really, honestly, we should quit after last year.
We should.
We really should have.
Oh, man. Well, thanks for doing the Thanksgiving tangent with me.
Hell yeah. More you know about Thanksgiving.
Indeed. Well, do you have any final thoughts to sum it all up?
Nah.
All right, and back to us, and we have a surprise guest joining us on the show as well. Chris Taylor, how are you doing today?
Surprise!
We go to a pre-recorded review, and now we come back to the normal show, and you're here! Like magic.
I am. Yes.
And you could tell it's not pre-recorded because Cole is still here, too.
I am.
Oh, yeah.
Yay! There's Pete.
No, I'm just as sleepy and non-functional as I was before the break, so yeah.
Sweet. So let's jump into this. Chris, you are here to talk about Arcade Archives Neo Geo Robo Army, developed and published by Hamster, released October 19th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $7.99. Robo Army is a beat-em-up action game released by SNK in 1991. Head out to crush and destroy your enemies in order to restore peace from under the grasp of the robot core known as Hell-Geed? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I guess so.
Experience high-powered collisions. Send out the Robo Army. Chris, did you send out the army?
Was there an army to send out? I was not aware of that.
I mean, you were the army.
I suppose, yeah. You're kind of a one-man army, though. That's how these beat-em-ups go.
True. So what'd you do?
What did I do? I did everything. I walked to the right. I punched. I grabbed. I slam-a-jammed. Turned into a pink Jeep.
Okay, wait, so now you have my interest.
One of those.
It's just escalated.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so Robo Army is basically in that sort of vein of Neo Geo, essentially at their biggest, at their absolute peak, and that is oversized sprites beating up on other sprites in some sort of futuristic, like, you know, weird environment, whatever. This is the kind of game that when I was like a little, like when I was a prepubescent, I would see in like arcades and stuff, and they were always like the most impressive, because like other arcade games from like the 80s, you had like a little character, but these were massive characters, size of humans, as far as I could tell. And so now they've taken that experience and kind of shrunk it down to a portable screen, which you can blow back up on your big screen if you want. And Robo Army is another one of those. I'm not sure what about it like really stands out in its 1991 heyday. As far as I know, they were just kind of cranking these out as quarter munchers back then. But nowadays, it's actually a really refreshing brawler. Sort of a little bit like Final Fight, little bit like old Mutation Nation, which is another recent hamster Neo Geo release. It basically, you have this sort of, I don't know what you would, it's like a B-capped cyborg man. Who I guess he's all robot except for his face and his hat.
A B-capped. That's a good word.
B-hatted? I don't know. He wears the same kind of hat as I do, though, so I felt drawn to this character. He's also got, like, you know, the 24-inch biceps like me, so I was very, no, I'm just kidding. But, the story is that this evil guy called Dr. Jeep, or Dr. Geed, I suppose, is what they call him. He is trying to use his Robo Army. I understand that this may be the titular army to take over the world and basically enslave humans and take their brains and make more cyborgs out of them, etc. The evil Dr. Jeep basically kidnapped your character and turned him almost all the way into a robot, except that I guess he didn't install the mind control chip. You'd think that would be the first thing. That would be like his top priority, but in fact he saved it for last, like just before taking the hero's cap off, and the hero breaks free and then pounds his way through six stages trying to get back to the old doctor. So the gameplay of this is Neo Geo like top shelf quality fun. This game is one of the reasons why people pay like so much money to try and nab these Neo Geo cartridges, and why we're so lucky that we're getting them at such a cheap price on the Switch.
Yay, $8. And on it, everything. It released on everything at the same time, which is cool. I like when Hamster does that.
Nice. Well, yeah, it is beat 'em up par excellence, for a couple of reasons. One is that it doesn't fall into the Final Fight trap. And Final Fight is not a game I'm particularly fond of. And here's the reason. I have a huge pet peeve when it comes to having to do most of your fights off screen. So a standard beat-em-up will have like enemies just kind of flailing at you from the outer skirts of the screen. You kind of have to chase them and over past the edge and then punch them off screen and then just hope that worked. This game is a lot better about having the enemies take front and center before you actually have to fight them, which makes it a little more like a good beat 'em up, like a Ninja Turtles game, for instance, will have the action continually focused on the center, and that this game does that, and that's a good point that I like to look for in beat 'em ups that I don't think other people do. The other thing is that at the default difficulty, it's not especially punishing. And because this is an arcade port, you, if you really want to, you can easily just you can play what I like to call rich kid strats, and that is to say you just keep dumping credits into it until it's done.
Which See, what, is why do that when you could go into the dip switches and just give yourself 99 lives?
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, like, you can just give yourself another credit with the L switch, so with the L button, so you can just keep doing that. So that's a really good thing. And actually, it does have a dip switch for difficulty. It has several, like all the hamster Neo Geo releases, this one has just buku of options that you can turn this game into a punishing monster if you really want to. It starts at default difficulty 4, and you can go up to 8 or down to 1. You know, 1 if you really just want to, I don't know. I can't even imagine. I guess you just, like, thump it every character on the nose, and they just explode. speaking of which, that's another thing that I really like about this beat-em-up, and like I said, good beat-em-ups. The action and the sound, the sort of feedback of the game, the graphics, everything. Like, when you punch a robot with your robot fist, there's a robot explosion, and it's just all robots. It's like you really feel like you're a heavy metal thing, and that you're punching other heavy metal things, and the explosions are just, like, really satisfying. And I really enjoy that. Again, that's something that you would find in, like, a Ninja Turtles or the X-Men arcade game. I actually got a little bit of nostalgia for that. Then I played that last weekend, so
nice.
That's probably the reason. Yeah. Well, and, go ahead.
I was going to say, I guess the only question I have is $8. What's your verdict? But I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, I didn't even really touch on all the things. I will,
there's not too much to touch on because it's an arcade game from 91. I do want to say, I enjoyed that the one power up in the game turns you into a fucking car and you can just run people over.
Pink buggy. It's amazing. That was going to be my last point, really, about it.
Just run motherfuckers over.
Also, I just had to test it right before the stream. It does have the two-player mode fully intact. You can take the little Switch controllers and put them on their side and play as two players that way with the little screen and the stand and stuff. So, excellent arcade, powerful robot fighting on the go. I mean, little else in this world is worth $8, more than that. So, go pick it up. Pick it up, like, for two or three systems. I dare you.
I might. We'll see. well, Chris, thank you for coming on and talking about Robo Army. We're gonna let you get going, and then we got two more games to talk about.
All right, thanks very much.
Take it easy.
You too.
All right, next game to talk about is called High Hell, developed by Terry Velman and Dose One, published by Devolver Digital. It released October 23rd on Steam for $9.99. Descend upon the criminal underground with the most blessed of shotguns and bring lethal salvation to those that have fallen from the light. Pop brainwashed chimps, deface corporate effigies, and dismantle the business dealings of the unrepentant cartel in a vibrant remix of the classic first-person shooter. The Miracle Whip-loving Dark Mika wrote in this one, and I feel dirty, but I'll be reading this. She says, High Hell is an extremely fast-paced run-and-gun FPS. You play as a woman in a luchador mask fighting the corporate workers and defenders of Hellcore based in, you get it, straight-up hell. I think I'm already sold.
Yeah.
Woman in a luchador mask fighting in hell. Like, where else does this game go?
Like, you can't really build on that much. It just... That's kind of the pinnacle of Kick-Ass right there.
Yeah, but we'll try. We'll see where this review goes. I already know I want to buy it, though. This game is for people who are good at fast games and who are super precise, like the 360 no-scope bullshit type people. The rest of us peasants are unworthy. There's 20 levels with major boss fights at 5, 10, 15, 20, mostly anyways. Beyond that, there's not much understandable story to this game. There's only a few words spoken in the entire game. No text information other than the game telling you what the mission for the level is. Later on, when you've beaten the game, things fall more into place and you get a glimmer of a narrative, or maybe I just created one myself, I don't know. The game is hard as balls. I had slow times and got a friend to help me do them again faster, which was a pain. There's no cover mechanic, really, just hide behind walls and other things by crouching. You have enough health to survive four shots, and with each kill, you get some life. After a few kills, you can get one shot one more time without kicking the bucket. Has a lot of gray-ass buildings and red landscapes. Well, I mean, it is hell. You get cute little cutscenes between levels, which aren't really necessary because there isn't actually any load times between the levels. These are fully fabricated. If you go into the level select, it boots each level much faster than you would just continuing to the next level by clicking continue because of the little interactive cutscenes. They're not even really cutscenes, but I lack anything else to call them. It's more like a mini game or something. You're in your hideout and you can interact with stuff but not move around. You only see these when you continue between levels. If you quit out and go to level select, you won't see them. Game is $10. I love the game, but here the game gives you a global score and time for leaderboards. It counts up how long your fastest runs of each level took total, and the same for score. I beat the entire 20 levels in just under 8 minutes total. Wow. Granted, I played the game for 2 to 3 hours, give or take, to get that under 8 minute time score, but still. You're buying about 10 to 15 minutes worth of game for a dollar a piece. I would say it's a try it because Steam has a return policy. You'll know if you like it within an hour. Joe, however, would probably say it's a buy it because he spent more on less. True. I'm dirt poor. My mindset is different. I want the max amount of bang for my buck, and this doesn't have it. So I say when it's on a good 50% sale, 100% buy it. Until then, it's a try it. Test it out. If you don't like it, return it. I know Steam doesn't like people using a return function like that, but, tough shit.
I mean,
I was sold on a buy it when it was a luchador in hell.
I'm immediately interested when there's a female protagonist. That's horrible, but it, like, that's, you have my attention right there.
Yeah.
And you put her in hell? Oh, come on, let's go. I have low standards of quality for games. I'm pretty easily amused.
Nice.
So I would jump on it.
Sounds good. Well, final game to talk about tonight is called Dying Reborn, developed by Netcom, published on Xbox One by eHome Entertainment, released on the Xbox One October 31st for $14.99. I want to play a game. It will help you remember something kept away in memory's deepest recesses. Those who have experienced the fear of dying will truly understand the joy of reborn. Game start. Cole talk.
Say please.
No. What is Dying Reborn?
So insanely weird. And I loved every minute of it just because it was so... Remember when earlier I was like, I love horrible B-movies. This game is the horrible B-movie of horror games.
Nice.
And it's perfect for it. Absolutely. None of it makes any sense. Everything just has you going, why am I fucking doing this? Why can't I stop doing it? You just have to keep going to figure out why anything occurs. And even still at the end, you're going to be like, I'm not entirely sure what I just experienced. And that's okay. You will be perfectly okay not knowing where that shit ended up at. If you've seen the title card for this game, it's basically all you need to know about the weirdness of it. It's just a dude standing there in a profile shot. And instead of a head, he's got a great big giant fish head. Like a mask, but like a legit fish head. That is everything you need to know about Dying Reborn. I'm done. Well, no.
Something else we should know is, like, how does the game play?
How does it play? It plays weird. No, it doesn't. I just wanted to keep that going for a second.
You're the tired one, and I'm trying to speed this along.
I know, but it's just, I feel like it's not possible with just a few words to get across how insanely good and bad this game is. Like, I can't drive the point home enough. It plays as Almost like an escape room type adventure. It's broken up into 6 chapters, and with each chapter, you are in a room. You know literally nothing. In the very beginning, you don't even know your own name. You have no idea where you are. All you know is that you're trying to find your sister and help her, and her name is Shirley. There's, you know, items in the room that if you interact with them in certain ways, you can eventually progress to get out of that room. Once you get out of the room, it moves on to the next chapter, and you start all over again. You're in another crazy room. It all builds up, you know, from chapter to chapter to tell the story. It's not like you go from, oh, I got out of one room, and now suddenly I'm somewhere else insane. It all takes place within the Last Harbor Hotel. And so you are trapped in the room. You find the items to get out, and then you're able to explore the hotel, but you are limited to the area that is pertinent to the chapter that you're in. There will be puzzles, locked boxes that you will need to uncover codes for. There are, you know, hidden clues throughout that you can find. The one thing that did bother me about the game, though, as with people would call it a walking sim, basically anything that's a first person explorer type game at this point is a walking sim for most people. But I tend to turn my camera sensitivity way up. I'm one of those weirdos. I turned it up quite a bit before I started playing. I thought, well, if 7's not enough, then I can just press pause, go into the settings, and up it some more. Yeah, you can't do that. Once you're in the game, you don't have any access to the settings anymore.
Interesting.
You have to back all the way back out to the beginning. Another thing that was kind of awkward, right bumper is pause.
What?
I don't know why. Right bumper is pause menu. And I was like, huh? You will use A to interact mostly. There is, of course, where you pick up key items to help progress the story and to solve puzzles, you'll need to be able to access that inventory, and that is mapped to the left bumper. And then once you are inside the inventory, you can, you know, scroll left to right with your analog stick, and you can combine items using Y. It's really intuitive, and as once you figure out how to open it. Like, it never tells you how to open that inventory. And so in my head, an inventory should be mapped to like Y or X.
Yeah.
I should be able to push B to back out. It's like the control mapping was a little awkward, but once you get used to it, it's not a huge deal. I did just keep randomly hitting the bumper and then being like, oh yeah, that's not what I think it should be. I'm paused, but that's okay because it's not, there's no time. There's not anything. There's a few moments where the music kind of swells and events kind of occur that make you think you should be hurrying the fuck up. And the game, even though it makes you feel like you need to get your ass in gear, you don't. There's not any, like, pressing concern. You can't die. It's just, take your time, look for the clues, solve the puzzles. I will say there were some times I did legitimately jump a couple times.
I was going to say, it's a horror game. Was there any fear pee?
I didn't fear pee, but there was one instance where I was like, I walked into a room and I got the impression that it was a narrow room. And I was like, okay, I see the objective directly in front of me. I'm going to walk in and turn and walk back out. I turned left just enough for something to trigger and fall. In this tiny ass room. And at this point, it's still early in the game, and I didn't know if I could die or not. And I'm just like, oh, never mind, I'm fine. I'm good now. Well, the entire horror aspect, and like I said, there are those couple of jumpy moments, but everything basically hinges on the whole idea that you don't know who you are. You don't know what the fuck's going on. You don't know why you're being forced to do some of the things you're forced to do. Some of those things are really fucking gross, by the way. You don't know why you gotta do it. You just know that you're trying to get to your sister.
Well, I guess the only question left is, $15, what's your thoughts?
It's on sale for $15. It is going to regularly be $20.
No, that's and right. I meant to update that.
Yeah, the price, that's what I'm here for. The price is a little high, especially considering you can 1K this in an hour. Like about, I think like an hour and 10 minutes. If you're not exploring, if you're just using a guide, you can do it stupid quick. I mean, if you take a little longer, even still, you're pushing like 2.5 hours tops to explore every nook and cranny and fuck up the puzzles a few times. So I do feel like the price is a little steep, more acceptable at the $15 tag, but for the $20, I tend to give it more of a try it just because it's a high price for such a short gameplay experience.
Yeah, I think the reason I still had it is $14.99 is because it's on sale for like another month still. So it's a very long sale.
Yeah. I mean, at $15, I'm more inclined to say pick it up because $15 is a little more acceptable. There's just something about the $20 tipping point that if I'm plunking $20 down on a game, I want it to last me a little while.
Makes sense. So,
you know, and that's my own odd quirk. And other people, I'm sure, are like, don't be ridiculous. If it was fun, it was $20. But it's just my quirk there. $15, I'm more inclined to say, yeah, buy it. But I did enjoy it. I thought the story was really fun. I compared it kind of to, great, now I can't remember the name of it. It was the other odd one that I played recently, Decay the Mare. it's very similar to that playstyle wise. And even in like the runtime, I felt like maybe Decay's ending was more satisfactory and did a better job at explaining things than Dying Reborn does. But it's still a good experience. And the jump scares, they're not overwhelming and there's not a ton of them. And the most that I did was like, okay, I'm fine. You know? And I tend to like that a little better than just straight up, you know, some games straight up make me panic, and I don't have anxiety on a general basis, but they can do it anyway. And you're sitting there going, look, my chest is heavy. I can't breathe. I can't play this right now. Nice. Sometimes you just need a horror game that's fun without pressing on you with the fear factor. And this one did a really good job. It's creepy and it's gross, but the fear factor wasn't so overwhelming that it couldn't be enjoyed.
Nice. I realized why I didn't have the pricing correct on my sheet. I, like in my head, I'm like, I thought I went back and made mention of a game that was $20, but on sale for $15 for a month. Yeah, I wrote it on the wrong game. So I'm a genius.
Editing.
Nah, laziness. Too much editing already. But that is it for tonight. That's all the games we got to talk about. Thanks again to James for coming on and chatting with us about all of his cool NES stuff and about mayonnaise for way too much time. Thanks again to Tim and Chris for coming on for some reviews. And thanks to you for being my buddy for the week.
Thanks for putting up with me.
You're more fun than CJ was. Because I,
oh,
I'm
no,
pretty,
if he hears this.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't listen anymore, so whatever. Dropped us like a bad habit. But that is it for tonight. I have no idea what music is going to be playing, so just enjoy whatever plays. And Cole, do you have any final words to end the show? And you can't say no, because this is like the end of the show, not just of an interview segment. So I need some final words.
Play all the games and enjoy them and fear pee a little bit.